recorded live.
Yeah. The topic tonight is race. Just like I was saying, I don't know, man. I don't know where it came from. I don't know where the topic came from. It was like, okay, let's talk about it. We have not driven down this road yet in 3 years. I was at this spa, Sunday with my wife, this place that we go to out in Virginia. Actually, P-Town, you've been there once with us, remember? P-Town, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, it's Japanese owned. It may be Japanese. Let me just say Asian. Now, you got all kind of people going there. You stay there for the day. You do whatever you got to do. Whirlpool, eat, drink, whatever the whole day. And we normally go there and watch football, whatever. But this particular Sunday, the Knicks were playing. And now these, you know, I don't really know how many Orientals are in the basketball.
Wait. Oriental is a derogatory term.
Well, then you gotta help me out. I don't know whether it's Chinese. I don't know whether it was. You gotta give me lack of a better. I don't know.
Asian American.
Asian American.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Asian American. Gotcha.
It's funny that you said that though, because I didn't know Oriental was a derogatory.
I didn't either.
Because where Tony and I grew up, that's what they were. Rugs, Oriental food, and they were Oriental people.
Yeah,
it wasn't derogatory.
Oriental is like what you call rugs, but when you talk about it's, you know, now some Asians may not take it as offensive, you know, but some do. But it is actually, you know, rugs are Oriental, so just want to put that out there.
Yeah, good. I appreciate that. I appreciate your knowledge on that. And again, we don't want to offend anybody.
That's right. That's right.
You know, but anyway. So anyway, the Knicks were playing. Now, the Knicks got this new star that was riding the bench. Last name Lynn. Okay? And you could see the Asian descent around the TV watching Lynn. Now, the people that were actually watching basketball, you can tell, didn't really know much about basketball, or probably could care less. But the fact that Lynn was playing, they were cheering for Lynn. And I'm standing there, I'm like, you know, I admire that. Because, you know, that's somebody that you identify with in this country doing well.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? I admire that. I admire that whenever, when Sammy Sosa was doing it, when, you know, and his people came out and supported him. I admire that. But to just flip it around, if it was hockey and it was an African-American, or let's just say a Latino hockey player. No, forget about that. Let's just say African-American hockey player. Would we support him the same way? Just to throw it out there, would we normally go and say, okay, yeah, it's a great thing? I mean, in this country, do we do that? Or is it just a cultural difference?
Cultural difference.
Yeah, I know they have one, I think.
Because what
one.
Happens is, unfortunately, we blacks generally are crabs in a barrel.
Mm.
And that's the problem with we as a people, that when one rises up, the other crabs try to snatch him back down. And that's the problem with where we came, the way we came to this country and how we were divided. Any ethnic group that comes to this country, they start at the bottom, and they hold together. And you can have a Korean, come in here, and they live 100 in a room, you know, and they'll walk past 7 shops to shop with the Korean guy. But we blacks won't do that. Somebody gets ahead, and they want to tear him down, call him an Uncle Tom.
Wow.
I'm telling you, I'm living it.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I mean, we're the only, to be honest with you, blacks are the only culture who are not together.
Yep.
I mean, we've been broken down as society so much that we, as of today, you would think we would get it back together, but we can't. And what I mean is that we now are the lowest population in America. Because, you know, half of us are in jail, so now you don't get pardoned, you don't get called as a census. But the other thing is that I see it all the time. I see, like right now, I see a lot of Hispanics and Puerto Ricans. They will come to this country, and half of them will become roommates, and they'll put their money together and buy a house. And once they buy a house, they'll get one of them to go buy another house, and they'll put two, three families in there, and they'll keep the money in-house, but they'll go to work every day and they'll do things. When we get money, you know, we never see money, so we have to go spend the money. But we don't spend it in our own community. We spend it out because that's the thing we always wanted. We always wanted what other people wanted, so we will go out. And then if you don't have it, it's like, hey, you better go get it on your own. Where everybody else's group worked together. And until we do that, you're going to have a big problem.
Got that right.
Now, you just said something interesting. You said that we're not used to money. We haven't had money. But this is 2000. I'm going to say this a lot tonight. Just get ready. That this is 2012. I'm just saying, in 2012, there's a lot of African-American millionaires out there and a couple billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I'm with you, but when is it going to come to the point where we can stop saying we don't have money?
Well, I really think it's rooted back into slavery and the way we were divided and set to fight against each other. Oh, you're too dark. You go out in the field. Oh, you light, bright, and damn near white. You get up, you know, you a house nigga. You get in the house. I don't mean to say it, but I mean that's what it was.
Sure.
You know, and the bottom line is, you know, that division amongst ourselves. You know, and there's more racism in the black community than there is outside the black community.
I mean, it happens every day. I mean, the N-word is now just a normal word of the vocabulary now. It has no meaning. The people who fought for us in the 60s who did have, those people who did own their own businesses in the community, they sold them. And so they can get out of the community. I mean, we at one time we were going that route, but then somehow the green took over.
One of the biggest downfalls to the black community was the Great Society Welfare State, supposedly to help the black people, but what it actually did was drive the men out of the homes. Because in order for them to get that money, there couldn't be a man in the home. And it really has wreaked havoc as today more than 50% of all the blacks are born into single-family homes.
Yeah.
You know, and the more babies you had, the more money you made. It's a sad situation.
So when you say the more babies you had, the more money you made, you mean the more money you qualified
wealth
for.
Wealth money you made.
Gotcha.
Okay, the more babies you had, the more check you got. And
yeah,
if you had a husband in the house, you didn't get no money.
Gotcha.
So what was quote-unquote to help ended up splitting and destroying the family. You know, whereas where our parents grew up, you know, in the 40s and the 50s, you know, we blacks were sticking together. And then we get quote-unquote freedom in the 60s. You know, and you know, freedom to do what? Freedom to go out and have babies and babies having babies.
Well, you gotta also remember, man, now, we're the only, I mean, even, it's bad to say it, it's bad to say it, but we were the most hated race on this continent.
Yeah.
And when I mean that, I'm not talking black, okay? I'm talking African American. I mean, even our own African counterparts look at us as lazy. I talked to a guy the other day who's Indian, and he says he doesn't understand why we're so against each other. Because overseas, everybody emulates African American.
Everybody what?
And the music emulates. They love the music. They love the clothes. They love the style. They love our business sense, and that's where they get it from. You know, African Americans run the country, really, because we buy the most products out of anybody, any other culture. You can look it up. African Americans buy the most products out of anybody. There was a time where Ralph Lauren Polo, he didn't want to sell to black folks, but his company was going over. So guess what? They were the ones buying his product. And now his product is nationwide. You see what I'm saying?
Interesting.
People love making money off us because we don't know how to make it ourselves.
Interesting.
In the car industry, they say if you get you a black athlete, then your sales cars will go up.
Who said that?
That was on ESPN. That's in an article a couple months ago. That if you get a celebrity, 9 times out of 10, a black artist, because they put it in the videos and they express it, those car sales for that particular product goes up.
When you're talking about products that are depreciating assets. So, I mean, I don't know if we want to be leaders of the pack of buying a bunch of depreciating assets.
But that's what we do.
Right.
But that's how we live. And people buy, they get rich off us because that's what we do. You want a good shoe? Put it in a video. Put Jay-Z feet on it. Air Force One. They ain't gone out of sale yet. You see them with a new kick. We'll go pay $200-$400 for those shoes.
Yeah, but I mean, you right there. But then, I think other nationalities are buying other things, high tech stuff. You know what
right.
I mean? You know the new Apple that comes out, the new this, the new whatever electronic that comes out. You see what I'm saying? So we may be doing it with Jordans, but other people may be doing it with other high tech. Big ticket items, the new plasma that comes out, keeping up with the Joneses, with the softwares, you know, that come out. I don't think it's just us. I mean, I could be wrong. I mean, we do mismanage, but and some of the you know, some of the things that we buy don't have much value, but still, I don't think that, I mean, again, I could be wrong, but I think that if you go to China or Japan, they're buying up electronics. And they're buying Jordans over there, too.
Mm-hmm. They already got the iPhone 10 over there.
iPhone 10. They're pimping out their cars fast and furious. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? They're doing a lot of things. They, you know, so, you know, when you go on eBay, when people are doing all the shopping on eBay, it's just not African American.
Yeah, and I
think it's what we see.
Right. I want to just talk a little bit about the term African American, because I actually don't like that term. Because
I can't stand it.
Yeah, I've been to Canada.
Let's
and,
not say it again.
I mean it's fine. You know, I'm just talking about personal preference.
Yeah.
I'm black. That's how I identify myself when it comes to, you know, my skin color or whatever, if I gotta check a box. But, you know, I've been to Canada a couple times and there's no African Canadians. You know, they're all Canadian. And I think that, you know, with the whole Asian American, African American, that's a dividing line right there. When you state, for the record, I am African American. And that's really you're really drawing a line in the sand right there. You don't even know it. You're doing it subtly, it's, you know, indirectly. But, you know, I don't even, you know, when I refer to myself, I don't even use that term, African-American, because I don't like it, you know. And
you want to hear something funny? I have been to Africa, and there are a lot of non-black people that are Africans.
Sure. Right.
Okay. Matter of fact, one of my best friends, the pastor that married me and my wife, is from Africa. He's Egyptian, and he's not black. And he jokes, he says, yeah, I'm really African-American. Now, the biggest challenge I have with it is that, first of all, I'm American.
Sure.
Okay. And, you know, we all have some place we come from. And, you know, y'all who know me, you know, you look at me, well, he's black, he's white, he's what is he? I've had to deal with that my whole life, you know.
Yeah, so people, I asked you that today. Didn't I ask you that today?
Huh?
I asked you the other day.
Yeah, you know, it's funny now, but, you know, I've had people, I have, you know, old white ladies come in my office and they want to ask you, but they don't know how to ask you. So they say things like, well, what's your nationality? And I go, American. They go, that man is stumped because, you know, they don't want to say, you know, it's not politically correct to say, are you black or white? You know, so
right.
They go, well, you know, what's your heritage? And I go, well, how far back you want to go? And they go, well, how far can you go? And I go, the garden? They keep me like, what? You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, we're all mixed up with everything anyway.
That's
you know,
right.
But,
you,
I mean,
you got
you
that
know,
funny last
I have
name,
a real
too.
Problem with that term, but because I think you need to be proud of your country.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? And I don't have a problem if somebody said, hey, I'm an American of African descent. I got no problem with that. Okay, but first you're an American. Most people running around claiming African American never set foot on the continent of Africa. Okay, and I've been to Africa, and they don't particularly like us calling ourselves African American. Okay, that's a Jesse Jackson nonsense, but that's another story. But most Africans don't appreciate Americans saying that they're African American because most American blacks don't know anything about Africa and have never set foot on the continent.
Good words. Yeah, so we will. Just call, we will eliminate that from the dialogue tonight. Anybody else got anything?
Yeah, I'll just add that when it comes to terms and usage and labels, personally, I don't even, especially in the presence of my children, I have two daughters, they're pretty young, 8 and 4, but in the presence of my children, I don't use the term black and white as descriptive terms. Like, I don't say my black friend Tony or my white friend Scott or whoever the case may be. You know, and there's some points when, you know, I'll be talking to a wife or something, and but we try to not use, you know, we might use, like, code words. Like, we'll say my B friend Tony or my W friend Scott or whatever.
Yeah.
But we make it a point, you know, not to use those terms because we don't want the children to hear the addition or the subtraction in our dialogue based on one's race. We don't want to, you know, even the slightest bit, you know, have them confused about, well, why did daddy make a point that he's black? Or why did mommy make a point that she's white? You know, that's irrelevant. You know, so when we're, especially when we're in their presence, you know, we, you know, try to, we don't even, it's just my friend Tony, you know, or
yeah,
my friend
yeah.
Scott, you know, we just leave that out of there.
And we're going to get to that too, because that's a total different dynamic when it comes to addressing that whole situation with children and whether we do it and how we do it. But I want to change gears just for a minute. Is Ken on the phone?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Ken, there was something that you posted, and, you know, if you don't want to talk about it, let me know. It's just something that you posted on your page once that, you know, you were upset about it and I was upset about it too with you. About something that someone was talking in reference to your race and your political party and it was something derogatory. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I was accused of being a racist because I am white conservative Christian.
Yep, that's what it was. And
can I tell you what I'm accused of being? And
sure.
Uncle Tom, because I'm a black conservative.
Okay, good. I like it.
I don't.
No, I'm talking about the conversation content is what I'm talking about. Not that part. But
I've been called a turncoat. You don't know where you come from. You get above your raisin. Yada 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 yada.
But how did it get to that point? How did it get to that point where?
Well,
now,
you know, it's funny because if you're white, you know, you can be conservative or you can be liberal. I mean, you know, whites, you know, pretty much. But pretty much, if you're black, you're Democrat. Okay. And I'm going to tell you what, to be a black conservative, oh, my goodness, you talk about getting blasted.
I think we got into the 60s when it started really getting liberal, and we didn't want to hurt people's feelings. And as we got along the way, we lost sight of us being just true Americans, and we let the liberal mindset set in. Nobody really spoke up against the belittling of conservative or even Christians. No one really stood up. We didn't have any loudspeakers, men or women, who would stand up and say, you don't know what you're talking about. And now that we do, it's kind of like we're trying to catch up.
Sure. Sure. Wow. Good words. Yeah, because that affiliation is, bugs me. I don't know how. And, again, it may have been for a long time where you associate black people with Democrat and white people with being Republican. I don't know. But I think right now, at this point, it may have gotten a little bit out of control. Now, let me ask the question. How do we steer our family members, like our children, towards our party, or do we give them the opportunity to pick their own political party?
Well, I'll say this. I'm very astute in politics, probably more than a lot of you brothers know, but I'm pretty much ingrained in it, and I am not a Democrat. Let's just say that. But when I talk to my 8-year-old, and she reads everything, sometimes I can't stand it because, you know, I have the newspaper sitting on the table, and she's reading, you know, the front page headlines, and they're pretty out there, you know, but at the same time, I try to, like when she asks a question, you know, I try to get her to do some critical thinking on her own. I do not try to steer her, you know, to one party over the other. I ask her questions at her age-appropriate level about the issue and try to break it down to her level and then, you know, kind of just say, you know, well, what would you do in this situation? And then I won't say, oh, well, you're a Democrat. Oh, you're a Republican. We just kind of leave it at that because she's 8 years old, and I don't think children that aren't allowed to vote should not be involved in politics at all because they don't know. It's so many dynamics and complexities with politics, and to me it's exploitation. When you have little kids, you know, representing one party or another because they don't know and they're, you know, they're not mature enough. So, you know, to your question, Mr. Host, you know, when I don't talk to my 4-year-old, of course, about politics, but as my 8-year-old, she's very inquisitive. She asks a lot of questions. I just break it down to, you know, just basic. I just strip out the politics of it, even though we're still talking around politics, but I let her do some critical thinking, but I don't steer her in one direction or the other. I just allow her to use her own mind to think about the issue from where she would be coming from on it and how she would go about it. And then we just, you know, that's the end of the conversation. So, you know, but I don't steer her and say, oh, well, you know, good job, young lady, you're this or you're that. It's just like, all right, well, that was a good conversation. You know, let's do your math homework, you know.
Got
but
it.
I don't get into the heavy issues of the day with my 8-year-old, but you know, when she asks questions, when she sees something on the newspaper or talk about it.
But
how about,
he,
how about
go ahead,
indirectly?
Go ahead, Ken, I'm sorry.
What?
Say what?
Sorry, I was saying, but how about indirectly? Meaning, yeah. Does she see you watch the debates? Does she see you watch the State of the Union? Does she see you look at CNN or Fox News and seeing what's going on and commenting on them? As some of us, maybe you don't do that.
Yeah, and indirectly we do. You know, my wife and I, you know, talk about it in depth. And she's around, you know, she might be paying attention, you know, she might not. But, you know, indirectly, I try to censor her, you know, from the stuff. But our dinner table conversations are pretty deep sometimes. That's just what we do. So the kids are around. But, you know, as far as why, you know, what's on TV or, you know, what's on the radio, I try to censor her from that because that can be pretty provocative and she's not mature enough to, you know, to strip out the sarcasm or the, you know, the dog whistling or whatever's going on. It's not, you know, it's pretty raw sometimes. So I try to, you know, shield her from that as much as possible. But sure, she absolutely sees me watching, you know, I watch MSNBC most of the time anyway. You know, even though I'm, you know, I just like, I just watch it for entertainment value. I don't watch it for news. It's not, you know, it's not news content on any of those cable news channels. It's all entertainment. And, you know, I take it as such. I don't, you know, turn on those channels to, oh, you know, let me see the news of the day. It's all about seeing the spin of the day, you know, and I'm interested and intrigued at how they're going to spin this one. But, you know, we don't watch it together, you know, as a family, you know, but it's on, you know, we watch the news and everything, but, and like I say, they, you know, sometimes you ask the questions, and you know, sometimes not. So indirectly, probably more so than directly, to answer your question.
Now, I have two 27-year-olds and a 20-year-old, and my two 27-year-olds, my son is about as liberal as they come, and my daughter fiscally is conservative and socially is liberal, and my 20-year-old is probably more conservative than I am. I'm not as Rodney said, you know, real political. I don't get into the pop parties and all that kind of thing. I have a real problem with politics anyway, but my 20-year-old is very conservative. And gets ridiculed because of it, being a young black woman, and hearing all of her young black liberal friends.
Yeah.
But she's very strong and pretty much you know, stands on her values and which her beliefs. And you know, more so, is she a thinker, and looking at what her beliefs are, and says, you know, especially when she was younger. You know, how can this person, you know, call themselves a Christian but believe that? You know, so those were the kind of conversations that, or the questions that she would ask us as she got older. You know, so, but everybody gets steered. I was steered. I was a Jimmy Carter liberal because blacks vote for Democrats. You know, on the wall we had a picture of Martin Luther King, JFK and his brother, you know, and I mean that was the way it was. If you black, you Democrat, and I mean I never knew what that meant. It just, that's what you vote, you know, and politics was never explained to me, but that was just how you were supposed to vote. And as a matter of fact, when I get, you know, family reunions, I mean, my family is still 98% liberal. And Democrat, I shouldn't just say liberal, but liberal Democrat, you know. And me and my sister are the only conservatives in the family, and we're like, you know, the black sheeps.
Wow, wow. And
yeah,
I think that's kind of. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I said I wasn't a Democrat, but I've evolved over the years. But I don't know if I, when you said, you know, ridicule, I don't know if. I mean, if someone. I don't even know if anybody attempts to ridicule me because, you know, thankfully I'm able to, you know, break their argument down pretty quickly, and they're like, ooh, you know, so let me not, you know, call names or whatever. But But I mean, I've evolved over the years, and I think back to what the brother said. He said, you know, you're black, you're a Democrat. You know, so that's what I was in my younger life, and then I evolved, and I was an independent, and then I was a Republican, and now I'm a registered libertarian today. You know, which is neither. You know, they're just out of control. But that's not a conversation for this, you know, outlet. But I just think that, like you said, I mean, what it goes back to is what I wanted to say earlier is that it's more of a racial unity than, what the brother was saying is that, you know, we are all Americans. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, like you said, a white person can easily be a liberal or a conservative, Republican or Democrat, and it's not really that big of a deal. But when a black person, steps away from that racial unity, it's like, whoa, what are you doing? And it's like, what's the problem? You know, so I think that's what the racial unity trumps the American part of it. And I think that goes back to what the brother was saying about slavery, racism, all that stuff. It's like, it's that racial unity that you can't really break the code. And I think that trumps everything else.
I also think it's a regional thing, too. Because I was born in Massachusetts and flying over to California, or living in California. In Massachusetts, everybody is a Democrat. My brother and I one time had an argument about that. He was upset that I had turned Republican. He said, once a Democrat, always a Democrat. And, he never got the true picture. He hasn't really seen anything yet. But I want to say something about with the family. I have three daughters, and they're and my wife. Now, my wife is from California. And her political views changed a lot over the years. My political views changed, got more solid. I've always been a conservative. I never knew about Republicans and Democrats before, and I just registered Republican when Reagan ran because I was in the military and Carter was just bombing them, just hollowing us out. So, but hey, my daughters, I think it has a lot to do with how we live our lives. We really didn't talk much about politics as a young kid. You know, when they're younger, their political views and political opinions started forming that I know of, I'd say when they were out of high school, when they got the right to vote, when they started voting, they started becoming more interested in it. And I always encourage my kids and other people, do research. Just don't take what I say as my views. You know, they're my views. But you got to do the research and then form your own opinions. It has a lot to do with how we're raised. My mom is a liberal Democrat. She's Italian. She's Catholic. And, I think our conversations we'll have a good conversation until we start going toward religion and politics. And then our conversation sentences start to get really short, snippet, and we say goodbye. So, it has a lot to do. I think it's not only race has a very strong motive to it, but I also think it's regional and how one is brought up and how one observes the world themselves.
Yeah, good words. I think Rodney asked a great question earlier when he asked indirectly. Is it indirectly influenced? And like me, my father didn't do a whole lot of talking about politics to me when I was growing up. But my entire family is Democrat. You know what I mean? And when I went to the poll for the first time, that's how I voted. You know, and it may have been indirect, and then I've done my research after that, and I figured out, okay, that's where I'm going to be. It wasn't because of, and it could have been a family thing. And I'm glad that you brought it up, Ken, that you told your children to do the research. But do you think that your views could have had any impact on their decision making?
Well, yeah, I think so, because that's how I live. That's how they see.
Sure.
We hold the same values a lot. We differ maybe in some areas, but for the most part, we're all on the same page. But yeah, it has a lot to do with the parents. My mom and dad never really spoke politics growing up. I just formulated, it just interests me. And it was during the Vietnam era. Drug era, abortion just got on the issue, and I had a good history teacher that permitted us to voice our opinions.
Yeah, and I'll say with my parents, I've rarely, if ever, talked to my mom about politics, but me and my father go at it, and we try to stay away from the subject because, he's a staunch Democrat and I'm not, so that's a problem right there for him. And I think it's because, he comes from a different era, than I did, and as my children will come through a different era. But, again, I think it goes back with him, just like, how are you going to turn your back on the black race? I mean, that's how he sees it. Like you were saying, Tony, that, blacks are Democrats. We're Democrats. We stick together. The whole family's Democrats. And, I pretty much.
Hey, no. I wasn't saying that. I was asking the question. I'm trying not to believe it, but go ahead.
That's what I was.
I mean, that's what it is. And that's how he sees it. So, when we talk politics, he again, it's hard to talk to me because I'm not a Republican. So it's difficult. But we talk about the issues and we break down the issues and I get into a point where he's just like, well, he just kind of gets fed up with me because his argument has been sort of broken down just as far as it can go, but. We always arrive at the same point. It's because you're black. And the Democrat Party has a platform specifically for blacks. They don't hide that. They put that out there. And whereas on the flip side, we, as someone said earlier, that we're all Americans. That's the bottom line. And I don't believe in. And that's why people get tired of me because you can't put me in a box. Everybody wants to put, us in a box. And I'm like, don't put me in a box. I might be in this box for this party or that box for the other party, but I think it's all about trying to categorize us, into a specific box, and that's where you are on every single issue when that's not the case.
Well, I got a question. My problem is, Why are we ready to bury each other's views when it comes to political conversation, and then try to revert back to the Bible?
Well, I think that we don't like
today, they would, and I don't just don't understand that. It's how we want to put each other down, but then revert back to the Bible.
Yeah, and I think that it's possible. Most people can't have a civil discussion, like Ken was saying, generally when he's talking to his mom about religion and the politics, it sort of just goes off the trolley tracks. But it's difficult for people to have a civil, healthy discussion about politics, religion, racial stuff. Thankfully, I'm able to do it every day because I strip the emotion away from it as much as possible. Because we're emotional creatures, but the bottom line is once you get down, the truth is what it is. It's the truth. And, it's difficult because people are, they're set in their ways and, it is what it is. And most people don't have a lot of knowledge of this stuff. And, what I find is that they're speaking in sound bites or, they do like a drive-by. Whereas I'm like, let's talk about the issue. It's like an onion. I'm just like, it's several different layers, and let's really get down and just peel back all these onions. Whereas, they're just stuck on the soundbite that they heard on some TV station or something. I'm like, forget that. What do you think about it? And, but it's difficult because I think people don't want to take the time to do, find out the history behind, what is being said or what is being proposed, versus they just, lazy. I don't want mean to use that word, but you have to know your history. You have to know your history. Like, we had a chatter that says, black people were Republican up until about the 1930s, and most people are like, huh? Really?
It was longer than that.
Yeah, probably so. I don't know when the first years were myself,
Yeah, but
majority of African Americans weren't Republicans until the 1960s when Kennedy came in and realized that in order to win, he needed to get the black vote.
But if it was just the politics, it would be one thing. But when you mix the race into it, and that's kind of what somebody said earlier about the blacks being affiliated with Democrats and vice versa. But Rodney, I think that you when you were talking about your dad, I think that it was less political and more racial. Because because his reasoning behind it was because, you know, black to Democrat. You see what I'm saying? That confuses a lot of things.
Well, it's more of because I believe his father was probably like my grandfather. You know, it was not more. It wasn't that blacks are Democrats. It's more that you won't get. You know, they're trying to take away things from you, and that's what the when you use the Bible against somebody, when you use things that hurt somebody. Emotionally against somebody, then you take them away from the direct picture. I mean, from what it is. It is what it is.
It depends on your perspective because, you know, if you look at it from the standpoint, okay, yes, the ills of racism, segregation, all of that, we know our history. But if someone were to say, okay, clean slate, you know, it's just like running a race. You know, you put both people, white person, black person, you put them all on the starting blocks, you know, in the same spot. Unfortunately, black people would rather have a handicap because, again, they were handicapped before because they were behind before. So instead of saying, all right, you know, clean slate, we're good to go, let's just all just start from here fresh, they're like, no, you know, We want a handicap. It's almost like the two wrongs make a right mentality. And, you know, it's all about perspective. It's like, do you want us to, you know, take something or just deny them and favor you, or do you want a clean slate? You know, and that's about the perspective of the person. It's like, well, that's what it boils down to. It's like, do you want some criticism? You know, because of what happened before, is that we need to give you some advantages, you know, here and there, or do you want to say, hey, you know, apology, we're sorry, we can't change the past, let's just start from the clean slate and just go from there. And, yeah, you know, I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, but who's still thinking that way in 2012?
Well, I mean, the apology
can't. I just want to know, who's still looking for a handout in 2012?
You'd be surprised.
Yes, you will.
You'd be surprised.
I absolutely disagree.
Well,
I don't think you'll be surprised because the people, well, since we've been open, it's like my biggest question, of course, I've voiced it on my page or whatever, is the church, the Christian community. As a whole, as soon as we, the Christian community, the church, puts aside our differences and really vote on the bottom line and being the bottom line as in Christ, then we're going to have all this stuff. It's like with the Democrats, the people that vote for them, the majority of them are getting something out of it, personal needs, selfish motives, if you want to call it, and they have been... I may use a term, brainwashed, into believing that if a Republican ever got in office, all that stuff is going to be taken away from them. They're going to have to go out and find jobs. And so they don't see the fact that the true conservative, I consider myself a Christian conservative. I registered Republican because we don't have a Christian conservative party at this time. But anyways, they are more... If you want to put, I feel personally that they're more biblically sound. A lot of their stuff has to do with the family, individual success, you know, in the American dream. You work hard, you get the rewards. And there's other people that feel that they should need and deserve what others have.
Anybody want to get that?
So you're saying people vote Democrat because most times they're looking for a handout, or is that what, if I understand you correctly?
They do not want to lose what they're having. That's why you have commercials with people that look like certain Republican politicians throwing granny off the cliff because they don't want to lose their Social Security or Medicaid. And so whenever they look at the policies, like you said earlier, if people really read and listen to what the people, what the politicians are saying, do the study themselves, form their opinions themselves, we would be in a whole bunch, we'd be in a better situation.
This is why, listening to this phone con, this telecon tonight, this is why all the phone polls always get it wrong when it's time to vote. Because a lot of this stuff is driven by the media. As the media polarize certain situations, it's certain aspects to capitalize on a lot of these misnomers about Democrats and Republicans.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been a registered Republican, and now I'm a registered Democrat. And I got no problems about it. It's against the mold for me to change my mind or something.
Yeah, and I think you said something profound, brother. But we can't blame the media. Because like I told you before, I watch this stuff for entertainment value. I don't watch it to say, oh, they're doing that, but they said that. You know, whereas some people do. They watch it to get their
right
news.
Exactly. You the prototype. You know, a lot of people see this stuff and they take it as law. They take everything that Rush Limbaugh say is the gospel.
But see, and that's another thing is that most people haven't even listened to Rush Limbaugh. Where if you actually listen to him, which I do regularly, Rush Limbaugh is the same thing as Bill Maher. I mean, they're both the same. I can listen to both of them, and it's like that's their stick. It's entertainment,
yep.
But it's laced with truth and sarcasm. And if you don't listen to the whole context, if you listen to what the media picks out, you won't get it. But if you listen to the whole show, you'll really get it. And I was, I say this because I was guilty as charged because before I started listening, I was like, man, I can't listen to that guy. And then I started listening, and the guy it's interesting because the guy would have been off the air. He wouldn't have 20 plus million listeners if he wasn't entertaining. Rush Limbaugh. No, Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
Really, both of them are very edgy.
Yeah, they're edgy. Yeah. I mean, they're edgy. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to Rush Limbaugh and Bill Maher and KFI and all of that stuff. And they just, they snappy headlines.
Yeah.
And they're shock jocks. I mean, just like Howard Stern. And again, you have to listen to it with that context. You can't take, everything that's said as, that is the gospel. Bill Maher said it, Rush Limbaugh. It's all got some sort of spin to it, and you just have to take it for what it's worth. And I think that's what people go into it, listening at, let me get the word. But like the brother said earlier, you got to do your own research. You know, study to show thyself approved. I mean, it is what it is.
You know, I think the biggest challenge that I have with people, Rodney, is that they don't study.
Uh-uh.
They don't have any clue what the party that they support stands for. And I mean, I don't have a problem with whatever somebody wants to stand for. And if you believe it, I think you should stand on the top of the roof and scream it. But so many times I've talked to people and I said, why do you vote this way? What are your real beliefs? And they'll tell me, and I'll go, this person doesn't stand for that. This is what this person stands for and that person stands for. How can you stand for that? Well, I'm going to vote that way anyway. And I go, wow, it's amazing. I mean, if you support, whatever your key issues are, and nobody, the whole platform is not going to be your key issues. Whatever they're important to you are, they are. For me, there's two things that I vote on. One is fiscal things and two are moral things. But whatever is important to you, that's what you should do. I mean, climate change is not a big deal to me, but if that is your big thing and that's your thing, I think you should fight for it. you know, but most people don't study. And they're like lemmings, and they just go along, and it's just amazing. It amazes me that you know, my vote counts just like theirs does.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
but the way that things are set up, I mean, we got to just look at it. We're set up differently. I mean, we're set up where states are different than federal. We're set up where they already know what states are red and what states are blue. And then you got to look at, you might have Democrat conservatives. There's a lot of Democrat conservatives in the North, where you have a lot of Democrat liberals in the South. I mean, we're all separated by different thoughts. But one thing why the media works is because somebody from the North may not understand about the person who grew up in the South, and vice versa. And then that's where you have the conflict, because you have a person say, hey, won't you just study? And then you have that other person who's going to say, well, if you're going to study, study the South. Understand where we come from and understand our feelings, that when we see these people talking, we know we look between the lines on both sides. You know, we all know we're human. We're Christians, so we all know that people are going to make mistakes. People are going to sin, and we're born into sin. But you got to make a decision, because we have to have a government to run. So you got to. That's why we're having so many problems, is because everything is already kind of set. It's just that, can they beat out the people this time? Can the Democrats beat out the Republicans in the state of North Carolina, or, you know, because we know it's a Republican state.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to look at all that, and then you got to look at these state laws. And I don't think everybody around here has gone to every 50 state and knows every 50 state laws.
Go ahead.
Just to shed a little light on it. The two things that matter most to me are health care reform and military. I voted Republican for Bush because I knew he would do the war in Iraq, and I voted for him twice. I voted for President Barack Obama because of health care reform. Our health care system is a joke. And because I knew he had no problems letting special forces do what they do. And I honestly believe that if we had another candidate in office right now, Somali pirates still be running wild down there, and also Osama bin Laden will still be alive. So that's why I voted for Barack Obama. Now, these Republican candidates that they have, they're so busy trying to go after Obama, I don't really know where they stand with the military.
We're corrupt now. I mean, they don't even help each other anymore. I mean, we put the whole political thing was so it won't be biased. You know, two-thirds checks and balances, that's all gone out the window, because it's who can make the most money, who can get away with stacking $100 million in my refrigerator so you can get this law passed. I mean, the political structure is done. It's gone.
I don't believe the political structure is done, because we still, as a nation, we still have the right to vote. And
the political system is done because they've gotten rid of a platform an independent candidate can run.
No.
You either have to be Republican or Democrat.
Anybody in the United States of America can run for any, if their citizens can run for the President of the United States. Anybody in this nation can run for governor, senator, mayor, comptroller, whatever you want to call it. We have that opportunity as Americans.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, no, you're right. You have the right to run for president as an independent, but you will not get the same amount of funding as a Republican.
But that's not true either, because
that is true.
This is what I'm frustrated too, is because we the people are letting them take what they want. We the people still outnumber the politicians. The election of 2010 was not a fluke. It was a wake-up call. A lot of Republicans, rhinos I call them, lost their position because the conservative people, the American people, who are tired of having people walk all over them on both sides of the aisle is getting frustrated. We want to go back to what the Constitution originally says, how this country was made. Who runs this country is we, the people. And if we let other people come in and dictate our political parties or who's going to run for whom or who's going to do what, is ridiculous.
Well,
and
I tell you what.
Happens,
I agree with that. Fellas,
I hate to stop that because it's kind of going into another direction. Which
yeah.
We knew.
Yeah.
Hold on one second. I want to challenge that dude that was speaking. I want you to look at how much money and where independent candidates can pull their funding versus Republican and Democrats, and you'll see they've changed the laws.
Okay.
You either have to be a Republican or a Democrat if you're going to bring in the millions to run for president.
That's true.
They've already rewritten the rule book.
Going back to race.
Okay.
Going back to race. How much race within politics? How much is politically motivated? How much is psychologically motivated for one race being the majority, one color,
yeah.
or one party? I'm
Thank
sorry,
you.
Being affiliated with one particular race. How much of it is politically motivated, and how much is psychologically motivated? And what I mean by that is simple. It's that it psychologically, I think society as a whole is always segmented. Religion is segmented, right? I mean, it's segregated, right, to some degree, because even the word tells you you should be unequally yoked. So it tells you you should be of the like mind, the same mind, right? And I'm not going to get into too many religions, but you can look all throughout that and find where people were set apart, right? And they were segmented. But even within the society, how much of it is psychological? When you go into a room, when you go to a ball or a party of some sort, and you go into a room, and I'm not saying those on the phone, but in general, people go to a, and you got five black people sitting over here at a table, and the rest of the room, the other 200 people are all white. Typically, black people will gravitate to a table where there's some black people, or Latinos will gravitate to where there's some Latinos. Or if it's an all-black party and there's only a table of white folks, then white folks who come in through the door last are going to typically gravitate to that white table.
Sure.
It's in whether it's the media or however you want, or if it's families indirectly influencing other families or their children and grandkids or what have you, they see a party that's primarily 90% black, or at least supported by 90% of the African-American community, they gravitate to. I think psychologically that has a lot of influence on what takes place, not necessarily the issues of the day.
Wow.
So
most people don't know the issues of the day, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
So how does this work in a marriage where you have one who's a Democrat and one who's a Republican?
That's a great question.
It is. I've been trying to
because
ask.
Because this is election year, so, I mean.
You usually get one line
talking about they, whatever, they wife.
hey, look, ask Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's divorced now.
and that's a great question, and I would say that, you know, in my younger life, I didn't pay attention. You know, I was one of the folks that I talk about, but I didn't pay attention, and I was, just a Democrat just because Mama and me was a Democrat. You know, that was all it was, but, you know, and my wife the same way, and I think she, you know, evolved faster than I did, and then I caught up to speed, but I think it was a time where, you know, she was not a Democrat and I was still a Democrat or whatever, but I wasn't paying attention. And then, you know, we would have, you know, but I wasn't, I guess, like a staunch, you know, a Democrat. So it wasn't difficult for me to leave the party, you know. So, you know, I was just trying to find myself. But, you know, back to your question, which is a great question, I do know couples that, you know, one is a staunch Democrat and one is a staunch, you know, Republican. And how they manage is they don't talk about politics. Now, I don't know if I could be, you know, today if my wife said, oh, you know, I want to be a Democrat. We're going to have some problems. You know, I don't know how that works, you know, to your question.
You say you are going to have some problems?
we are going to have some problems, you know, because I'm just like,
huh? Are you serious? Right, are you serious?
Yes, yes. And
mean to tell me, as progressive thinking as you is, you do not see yourself one day switching sides?
I've switched enough times now, brother, that there ain't no switching left. You know, I've been through it all, so no, I'm not going back, you know, to, you know, no going back to where I was, but
I don't understand how that happens. I don't understand how someone can know for the rest of their life they're going to be with one party. I just don't get that.
Yeah. Well, I'll put it to you like this, and this is a quick analogy, and I'll flip it back to the host, but I'll break it down, you know, just based on, because everybody, I mean, when we talk about race, money, green, et al., the dollar is the same thing to everybody on this phone. And how I break it down is the Democrat Party wants government the size of Disney World. Republican Party wants the government the size of Busch Gardens, whereas Libertarians want government the size of your county fair, which is basically all you can afford. You know, so, you know, with that, the Democrat want, they just want to, I mean, it's, the debt is $15 trillion. I don't think y'all have ever done research on $15 trillion. That amount of money will never be paid back. At this point, unfortunately, it will have to be managed, you know, and unfortunately our children and our children's children and the children's children will have to be part of managing that debt. But they'll never be, you know, a surplus or anything like
debt.
That.
We've been in debt since the Vietnam War.
World War II.
You know?
No, I mean, they say we got in debt as soon as Obama took office.
I mean, we had to make some adjustments because we had to go to war. Somebody came and attacked us, and we had to go kick some tail. That takes a lot of money from a lot of different things. That goes to, you know, follow those beliefs of, you know, an eye for an eye, the Old Testament, or do we follow the beliefs of finding a different way to solve that resolution?
We got to get it back to the topic because this is turning into political, and it's easy. And that's what we're talking about.
Yep.
We put the disclaimer out at the beginning. It's easy to go politics all night. We know it.
Yep.
So we're going to respect each other's views. But I want to get back to the race part of it.
Yes.
And I got the $64 million question.
Hit it.
$64 trillion.
Here's a trillion.
When it comes to being black and Obama got elected, was it a bonus if you were black?
Time out. Obama's not black.
Oh, okay.
Time out. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the fact, and let me quote Democrat strategist Donna Brazile. Obama spent 9 months in the womb of a white woman from Kansas. He is not black. He is biracial. And the fact of the matter, wait a minute, I'm not finished. My wife is biracial, just like Barack Obama. Now, the fact of the matter is, you don't even realize, and again, this goes back to doing research. You talk about hypodescent and hyperdescent. If you do any research, the facts of the matter is, by calling him black, only black, you're actually slighting him, because when biracial children were born to a mixed union, they weren't pure enough to be called white, so they chose to call them the lower socioeconomic class.
Right,
know,
we just
so,
want to answer to the question. We understand.
Right.
Oh,
you saying,
we understand.
You
we all know. We all know the history.
So you
no, we don't. No, no, wait a minute.
We all know
I'm
the
answer
history.
Your question, but again, I think
don't
that
want to go to that history lesson, man.
No,
don't
you
go to that
I'm not.
Yeah,
I,
yeah.
I mean. To answer your question, you said, was the fact that Obama was black, was it a bonus? And that was incorrect.
By the technical, I'm talking principle, I'm not talking. Let me ask.
Okay, Rodney, let me ask one question then.
Yes.
What do you call an individual who doesn't know where they came from?
Well, I'm not talking about an individual.
No. I'm saying we call maybe you do, but most of us will call ourselves black or African American or what have you.
Sure.
But we can't trace our roots back to Africa. We don't know if we're mixed with the master, you know, on the slave, or we're mixed with it. I know I got some Indian in my family, my grandmother, but, you know, you're mixed with all kinds of different things. So do you really call yourself black if you can't call Obama black?
No, I'm not talking. We've gotten off topic again. I'm talking about your parents. Let's start there. And then we're all mixed with everything and everything. I'm just talking about your parents. My parents are both black, okay?
Sure.
Obama's parents are not both black.
That's
a fact.
Let me clear it up then.
Okay.
To the people that identify with Barack Obama, would it have been a bonus when it comes to race?
There you go. That's a better question.
Let's just get out the, you know, the Webster version of it, and let's just say identification purposes, is it a bonus? Would people say, yes, I will sway that way because I don't really have a firm ground on anything, but I will sway that way because he's black. If you're black.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, him being black was that led heavily to me voting for him. And besides McCain,
sure,
a platform that I agreed with. So, yeah,
sure. That's a very simple question. Is yes, no different than if Hillary Clinton would have won, it would have been a big bonus for women.
For sure,
yeah, that's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Every other president we've had have been white or other than black. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, on this call, we can say yes. I just don't know if in other areas people will say yes. I think people will throw his views in and say, well, you know, I understand what he was saying, and I agree with all of his views, and that's why I voted for him. But a lot of times, I think as a culture, black people are happy, and it was a bonus.
Yeah, and I think that, and this is time back to the topic at hand. Do you see the energy after I said that the man was biracial? I mean, did you see that? And, you know, I'm not saying that I was offended or anything, but did you see, when I stated a fact, okay, I'm talking facts.
Sure.
And yet, you know, and we talk about race, and I didn't know if you had the one drop rule and all of that in your discussion points tonight, but I think it's important when you talk about race is that, like you said, I think somebody said before, we can't choose our parents.
Sure.
So, you know, when I can't, and you look at the whole, you know, when people identify as race, they had one guy who was white, and no, you know, his parents were white, he grew up in a white neighborhood, but he identified as black, so he decided to check black on his census. Now, that's, and what I'm talking about is that it's not a choice. Like, I didn't choose who my parents were.
Right. But the first kids of the country, what are they?
And see, that's where we're getting too far in the history of the, you know, the whole, we're all
you
mixed,
took
I'm just
there,
talking
though.
About, let's
say, hey, you took it there, Rodney. You took it there, Rodney.
Hey, when you say facts, you can't stop at a certain point.
I mean,
you got to go all the way back with facts.
No,
can you have black children from a biracial father? Can you get that? Can you get a brown cow from a black cow?
Yeah. I mean, Rodney, listen. Let's just go back to Rodney's analogy. You walk into a party. There's five black people sitting at a table, and there's 20 white people sitting at another table, and you're biracial. Where do you go?
It depends.
Well, if you're Barack Obama, you go to the black table.
Okay, where would you have went when Jim Crowism was taking place in the South?
And see, y'all are going too too far
Rodney,
back.
Rodney, we got your point. Rodney, you can
we got
your
point.
Blue in your
my
face.
Point, my point is,
well,
bro, is rooted in fact.
Must come from a Chinese woman, man. That dude is black as an ace of spades, bro. He knows he can tell. Don't change.
Just like, listen, Halle Berry, Tiger Woods, they're not black. They're biracial. And this is what I'm getting at, fellas, is that y'all are playing into the stereotype.
No,
back
man,
to the topic
no.
of race.
I'm not playing
that
into no stereotype.
Listen, I'm going to be honest with you. If you got to go to fat, when it comes to being biracial, your name has changed 1,000 times. It started out with being, if you had an ounce of Native American blood in you, then you were Native American. And then, you know, that means you were Indian. If you had an ounce of black
skin, I'm
you
talking about. Can we speak to your parents?
That biracial word is just a word.
This country is black and white.
The Articles of the Confederation. And that's
it.
This part of the amendment is that if you have a quarter ounce of race in you, you are a part of that race. That's in the laws.
A quarter
ounce.
You
know that, but we just like listen. Just like my children are 75% black and 25% white. Now, they're black because they're majority black. Now, my wife is 50-50. Barack Obama's 50-50. You see what I'm saying? It's no majority there. They're equal parts of both.
Okay, listen. Right. Listen.
Right.
You mentioned Tiger Woods, right?
I did.
Now, what happened to Tiger Woods when he came out and said, I'm not 100% black because my mother is Asian? What happened? How did people start to look at Tiger Woods at that point? Like he was denouncing his race, right or wrong?
Sure.
I don't remember.
I
honestly don't remember.
No, I remember that.
I remember that. Tell us what happened.
And he's still a good golfer.
Listen, I'm from the South. Put it this way, Rodney. If you're in a car,
listen.
Two men in the car.
I'm not talking about you looking at somebody and making it. I'm talking about what is.
The thing is, Rodney, is what other people think of you.
It's not what you are.
It's never been what you are.
But it should be, and that's what I'm saying. Y'all are playing
that's a perfect
the stereotype.
World, because you're in a perfect world.
We're not in a perfect world because y'all don't believe like I believe. I'm not going to assume anybody is anything until they, you know, tell me, my mother was Asian, and my father was Hispanic.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
If Barack Obama breaks into your house and you don't know who he is, and he steal your TV, and the police ask you, what color was the gentleman that stole your TV? Who was it? Can you describe
it?
What are you going to say?
It was dark. I couldn't see.
You got to ask the question.
It was dark. I couldn't see.
But you saw
him. I didn't have a chance to talk to him to see if he was not racist.
He was Spanish.
I told the police officer he was Spanish. He looked kind of Hispanic or Indian. You know,
now
that's
you dancing around it, Rodney.
No, I'm not. But
you
y'all,
are.
Y'all
you
are making
it.
To me, y'all are making, and this is great.
Okay, listen.
Because
this
is talking about race, and I'll be quiet.
It is.
But the thing about it is that I am speaking in a fact. Y'all are speaking in what society tells you to think.
No.
Let me ask you this. I don't give a damn
what society thinks. Look at the man and tell he's black.
Now wait a minute. You see my wife, right? So what if he was biracial and he was a lighter hue? Then what you would still call him black, right?
Let me ask you, if he had
African American features, yeah.
Yes. You own it at that point.
Rodney.
You own it.
Y'all are funny.
Rodney.
Yes.
Who was the first black president? Bill Clinton or President Barack Obama? Or do you believe?
Was biracial or somebody else was biracial. No, Bill Clinton, though, was not black.
Okay.
But, you know,
are you saying
Barack Obama
been a black
was the first.
Yet?
was the fifth or sixth biracial president.
So you're saying there hasn't been a black president as of yet?
No.
Wow.
No,
Herman Cain became president,
and I'm just talking about as a fact. I'm speaking in fact. If Herman Cain became president, he would have been the first black president.
So let me ask you this. No.
No.
I'm glad you said that. So what constitutes you being black?
Your lineage, your genealogy.
Exactly.
My great-grandfather
is a slave.
Y'all are taking it too far.
You said your genealogy.
Your genealogy. Y'all are excluding the fact that Barack's mother is Caucasian. Don't exclude that.
Yeah,
let's just start right there. We ain't got to go to nobody's grandparents. I'm talking about Herman Cain, mother and father. Barack Obama's mother and father.
Wait a minute. I got to bring this up. So let's flip it around. If I hate to put it this way, but what if the father is white and the mother is black?
It's still the same thing. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's still the same thing.
No, Rodney.
But it comes from a... Your earlier statement was that he spent 9 months in a white woman's womb. Isn't that what you said earlier?
It was, but the same thing.
Okay.
The sperm
hold
came
on,
from a white man, he'd still be biracial.
Hold on. Go ahead,
finish. Let him finish.
So now you're saying... Even though the seed came from a white man and it spent 9 months in a black lady's baby, sperm plus egg. What?
It's biracial. The same thing. It's the same difference.
So hold on. Let's just make this really easy. So you got the Obamas, right? And you got President Obama, who is biracial. I don't disagree with you using the term biracial.
Thank you.
Society we live in understands that he is the dominating part of his biracial heritage is African American.
And I don't care what society thinks.
Okay.
I don't go by what society thinks. I got you.
So at what point in his family's lineage going forward do they end up being black people?
His children are just like my children.
But he's not black.
75-25.
But you're saying he's not black.
He's not. He's biracial. You disagree with me.
So hold on. So if you're saying that this biracial man and this black woman get together, they make black babies.
That's right. Because it's a majority. It's a majority. Just imagine if Michelle was white. Now what?
So his children would be white.
Yeah, it's a majority. 51% is a majority.
So it's obvious that the dominating trait in President Obama is black. Is that right?
That's not correct. Kinky hair,
big nose, big lips.
I'm talking about sperm, egg. That's what I'm talking about. Michelle's parents, sperm, black egg, period, black baby. You know, y'all are into the features and characteristics and nose and lips. I'm still at identification.
That indicates the dominant trait, does it not?
No, it does not because it's not. You don't get a choice. It's not where if you got a big nose, you're black. It's who is your parents? Period.
You can't say that there's not a dominant trait,
but you don't identify yourself based on your traits. Let me ask you this.
Everybody in this country identifies himself with something. Whether you are, you can be a Mexican American, you can be an African American.
Yes.
But Caucasians in this country identify themselves as what?
Caucasians. European Americans.
As Americans. No, not you. They are. They are.
Wait.
Let him finish.
You got to identify as Italian Americans, Irish Americans, Canadian Americans, English Americans.
Okay, hold on.
First of all,
first of all, that's not on the form. They identify themselves as Americans, period.
Sure.
They don't classify. They don't subclassify themselves.
Well, who's doing that, though?
Hold on. So if his mother is American and his dad was African, he is by definition an African American.
No. By definition.
By definition, he's more African American than I am.
Mr. Holmes, I have a question.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Let's do some homework, okay?
Sure.
Before the 1970s, when the race issue started really developing and really popping left and right up here in America, go back to applications for unemployment, college, school, whatever, military, whatever. It did come out, and I guarantee you, on a 1950 application for a job, it wasn't African American, it wasn't Mexican American, it wasn't European American. You're either white, black, or other. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So that's how this race issue started to come up when people decided to take advantage of it, trying to split the American people apart. Okay.
Sure.
Now I am on my side of the family, my mom, I lean more toward my mother's side of the family, and they are Italian, okay? My dad is as high as 57, okay? He has Irish, Canadian, English, whatever, okay? I am, heritage-wise, I'm from Italy. I can trace my grandfather back to Pescara, Italy. He came to America in 1917, at 17 years old, okay? However, Kenneth Baker Jr. is an American. I was born in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, 1955. I am an American citizen. Everything else is great to talk about when you're with your family or when you're with friends and when you want to know where you came from. When we go back to that mind frame, but put Americans first, you're an American. Ronnie is an American. Everybody on this line, hopefully, I hope I can make this next statement, are Americans. They were all born in America.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. We've got to go back to that way of thinking, because then we become stronger as people, and the things that are now politically correct will fade into memories. Okay? I don't classify any of you guys anything but friends.
Sure.
Okay? I don't see, and I said this before, I see no color. My God sees no color. We are Christians. We are brothers in Christ. And that's how I view my friends. Okay? And that's, as soon as we are speaking generally, get on that same page, then this race issue becomes null and void.
Null and void. I mean, okay, so when people bring up, and I don't, I'm not going to harp on this one at all because I know how the rules are the call. But when people say that God sees no color, it makes me chuckle to a degree, only because he created the color.
What he means by he sees no color, he does not distinguish me as being white. He does not distinguish you as being black.
No,
he doesn't distinguish us as being the race that we're born into.
Well,
he distinguishes us,
but it's no addition or subtraction. That's the bottom line. It's no addition. Oh, you're black, you get a plus in my book. It's no addition or subtraction if you're black or white.
No, true.
That's the point he was trying to make.
Plus,
in addition, heaven will not be segregated. There will not be a black section and a white section and an Asian section and a Hispanic section. It will not, and a, or a biracial section.
Hey, Rodney. I'm so glad that's where you're at right now, because I want to ask a question.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Can we promote racism without knowing it?
Absolutely.
And the reason why I asked that question, because of what you just said, and it's also in my notes. as far as our children are concerned, if we live in an environment where it's just our race, if we shop in an environment where it's just our race, If we worship in an environment where it's just our race, if we bring home people that we can identify with, because I don't want Rodney to get hit me with the... I mean, you know what I mean? What are we breeding in our household?
Right. You're breeding division. You don't even know it.
You don't even know it.
Yeah.
What is... Help me out. What is an all-black church?
Mm.
What is that?
It depends on who you are, because some will say a division, and then others will call it unity.
Okay.
That's true.
Watch the church.
Good words. Good words.
That's
good
words.
Good words. But somebody just said, that's not how it's going to look in heaven. Am I right or
mm-hmm.
wrong?
That's
mm-hmm.
right. You're right.
That's right.
What is the church teaching?
About race?
No, are they preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? I was up in Seattle, Washington. We had this church. We were at a Free Methodist church. And right across the parking lot, this is a true story, right across the parking lot, there's a little Baptist church. Our black, our church was our white. We would sit and we would brainstorm how to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ in the neighborhood where our church was located, which is majority black. Okay? Come to find out that somewhere along the line, the church across the parking lot and the church that I was attending split. So what? I didn't know what was being taught. I didn't know what was, you know, when I got there, we were trying to get the churches back together. But the thing is, what is the all-black, all-white, all-Catholic, all-whatever church is teaching? What are we teaching? Are we teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, what the good news is? Are we teaching race?
That's deep.
That is deep.
That's deep. But it's valid.
Well,
it's valid. If you're preaching right out the Bible, but you have an all one.
Well,
something
okay,
church.
So, right, but at the same time, I don't think you can really put that weight on the pastor or the leadership of that church.
Okay.
Again, I think you walk into that ballroom, you gravitate to, you know, the table that identifies with you.
Sure.
I think you can. If you have a church that's comfortable in what's going on, it's good to talk. Words are words. Makes people feel good. Oh, we need to get more minorities in our church. We need to go outreach the neighborhood. But if the action is not there, then it's words.
Yeah.
Same thing with the other church. We can talk up a storm, but if we're not willing to take the feet and move them and actually do what we have to do, then we can be spinning wheels all day long. And as long as our feelings are being met and we're tickling each other's ears, and that's some honest...
But what are the words we're saying that needs to be said in the church? Go out and get a white friend and bring them to the black church?
What I'm saying is you got to be willing to see the whole picture. I'm using that church again, something happened that split that church up along the color line, okay, whites, blacks, something, and there was a group of people in that church that wanted to get back together. There's another group of people in the church who's been there longer that don't want that to happen.
Sure, well, it could have been, and I don't know because I don't know this church,
What I'm just saying is that when we're an all-black church or an all-white church, why and what is being preached? If it's an all-black church and they're preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ and they're doing God's work and they, for some reason, only God knows that the church is still that one singular dominant race, then so be it. We can't second-guess them. But if they're preaching race, and we are the ultimate race, and no one's going to get to heaven except for us because we're doing it the right way, then what are we teaching them? Are we preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ? Are we preaching the gospel of race?
You know? I don't know about that particular church, but they could have, I don't know, they could have had a white pastor before, and now, you know, they've commissioned a black pastor in the church, and white folks didn't necessarily agree with it.
Let me tell you,
the point I'm trying to make is this, is that
the question was, I hope I don't mess it up, about English color churches, either all white or all black, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, why are they all white? Why are they all black? If we are black and white,
I can answer that. And I think, Rodney's right. It is part psychological because, let me tell you my story. Now, I grew up in a black church, and as an adult, my biracial wife and I went to an AME church. And it got to a point where we weren't growing anymore. So all I knew was, all black church, and she grew up in a multiracial, multinational church. So I was just like, let me try this out. And let me tell you, when I came to the church where I'm going to now, and I love it to death, but in comparison to the church I left, the music wasn't bumping. It was like night and day. And I'm like, and I like my, the worship. I'm like, man, we had some stellar award winners leading the worship at my previous previous church. So it's all about worship style. And I had to relax. I had to be not be so selfish. And it has been a blessing, more so than the all-black church, because, little comments would be made and this and that. I'm like, that wasn't of God, in the black church. And it got to a point where I was just like, we just can't do this anymore. And my wife, who is of the lighter hue, she would get funny looks. Even though she is biracial, and you can tell that she's biracial, but she ain't black, But the fact of the matter is, she would get funny looks. And I'm like, how y'all gonna look like funny, man? I mean, come on. So anyway, I took the church we go to now is more her worship style, not mine. But at the same token, I was like, all right, and the word is when the fellowship, with, and it's multinational at our church, and I love it. And it is what it is. But I had to sacrifice my good bumping music and worship and praise for the word that we get. And I would have never experienced that if I didn't relax my pride and say, well, let me just try this, And it's been a blessing. It's been a blessing. Because I could never go to a singular church ever again. I would never, if I could help it, I would not go to an all-anything church ever again.
That's good words. And your story is similar to mine. My wife is Latino, and when we were looking for a church home, she was like, we got to figure this out. She said, because we're going to have to mix this thing up the best way we can. And we found our church, which is, a little bit of everything. She walked in there. She found Latinos in there. They showed her love, mm-hmm. and that's what was important to me. I'm a BR. I'm like you, right? I'm a BR right wherever I'm at. But mm-hmm. I had to make sure that she was comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it was me as being the head household. I said, we need to find a church home. So we need to do, you tell me what your preferences are. She says, well, I need to be able to identify with some people up in the church. Simple and plain. And that's how we ended up where we are right now, which is a little bit of everything, which is great.
Well, I think let me stop you right there because we've come kind of full circle. Because your wife, being Latino, says she needs to identify with other
that's that word.
Latinos.
That's that word again. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that, like you said earlier, but it goes back to who are we identifying with? I mean, do we identify with, because we all have prejudices, we all have biases, we just have to, tamp them down, and we all have, those
right.
of us who do have eyesight, we do see color.
Sure.
We
right.
do see that.
Sure,
We're not colorblind. We see whether a person is a man or a woman, tall
sure.
or short. I mean, we see all of that. So, when it talks about who we identify with, I think that's, where we're going with this thing is like.
That's where we've been.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, shouldn't we identify with.
And look, and Rodney,
with,
and Rodney
yeah.
with the whole Barack thing. Think about this. Think about black people that never even thought about politics.
That's right.
And they identify with Barack. So they go out and vote for Barack, and then they start watching CNN. Well, we need to figure out what's really going on. Why are they saying this or whatever it is? Why did we really vote for this? Let's go figure out, and let's get educated on what we're doing here.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's because that's who we identify with.
And let me tell y'all something briefly, and not to get off on a tangent, but this is back on topic. But do y'all know that starting in the year 2000, on the census, which we've talked about earlier, you could check two boxes. My biracial wife actually didn't even know it, and she just checked, you know, black. But in 2010.
Hold on.
Yeah.
That too fast.
What?
Too fast there, you son. You slipped through that one, but I caught that one.
Yeah,
your biracial wife checked black.
That's right.
Did you just say that?
That's
what
he
said.
Because, again, and I'm
going to
clean
up. Is there
another?
I'm sure there was another box there, too.
No, but society had told her to choose one box, black or white. And, you know, so she identifies as black. But in 2010, she was excited, even though in 2000 she could have checked both, but she was excited that she could check both boxes. Now, why I'm saying this now is because Obama had a census to check. And do you know there was an uproar in the biracial community because he checked one box? And the biracial people were like, hey, dude, you're like us. And it was a little kerfuffle because he checked the black box. And actually, somebody asked to ask him a question because, to me, you can't be both.
Well,
you can't be black
okay.
and biracial. I mean, by technical terms, the facts are on my side. By technical terms, you are one or the other. I am black. I am not biracial.
Well, now let's keep it in perspective because there would not have been an uproar if he was working at the Walmart.
Yeah.
The fact that he is in the highest seat of the nation, of course, groups want to claim him. But if he wasn't in the highest seat of the nation, there would not be an uproar. Absolutely, the people on the Caucasian side of it would have said, "Absolutely, you're black. Don't you lie on that sheet of paper."
But Rodney, if he were to check both boxes, would he have been in error?
No.
Right. So
okay,
hold on,
two answers. Ken,
I don't think.
What's that?
Ken, you still online?
Yeah, I was just reading the conversation between two of our guests.
And they're going there, aren't they? I love it. Ken, you've been around longer than me, so let me ask you a question. This is what I've heard my entire life, and you just tell me if I'm on the right path or not, if you've heard it before, because you're older than I am. If you are 1% black, you're black. That's what I've heard growing up. They say, I don't care. If you're mixed, if you're 1% black, you're considered black.
You're not the truth. Yeah. I have never heard that.
Okay, good. Anybody else? If you have any black in you, I mean, because it could be wrong. I could have been lied to. But that's what I heard growing up. And I grew up in New York, and you hear a lot of things. But if you're any black... You're considered black.
And Tony, let me read you the definition.
I've heard that. I'll go out on a limb and agree with you on that.
We've all heard that. And here's the definition.
No, wait, hold on, Ronnie. We have not all heard that because I have not heard that. Seriously, I've heard that.
Maybe what they told us as black people. I don't know.
Okay, but wait. In my house, we had... Honestly, I'm not colorblind. I'm not stupid. I live in today's society, okay? But I do not. I was raised. We treat everybody. We, myself, was taught that I would treat everybody the way I want to be treated.
Sure.
So when I say I see no color, that's what I mean. I have black friends. I have Mexican friends, Chinese, mixed. I don't care. It was never a subject in our house when they were visitors.
We're not talking about treating them, though.
Interacting with them. When they came over to my house, they were Ted and Reuben.
Sure.
When I went over to their house, I was Ken and whatever brother and sister I had with me.
Yeah.
That's
Ken,
when we interacted.
Ken, I guess it was just a bubble
with a bunch of other people in the bubble because we really didn't pay that much attention to... what our ethnics or what our
people.
Sure.
Pay his word.
You didn't pay much attention to it, but you see it.
But
right. you knew that they were white, you knew they were black, you knew they were whatever.
It wasn't the forefront of our minds.
I get it.
What y'all don't get is Ken was talking about living against the grain, against what society's mores have taught him. And that's what I was trying to talk about when I was telling y'all about hypo-descent.
Wait a minute. Somehow my head's spinning and I got lost in all of that because we're just talking to the bare essence of life here on planet Earth, which is I see this person across the street. I got a guy across the street right now. He's Dominican. He's Latino. And then I got the neighbor next to me. He's African American. And then two neighbors are white, right? And so, I mean, I'm not saying I'm treating him any different because he's Spanish and he's black and he's white. I'm just saying I can see that. I'm not blind to the fact that you are. I'm not going to treat you any different. I'm not saying that. I'm not going to offer one watermelon and another plantain because you know, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I got enough intellect to recognize that they are different ethnicities. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah,
and I
have to tell
you, but I don't see it. I acknowledge it. It's around, but I don't. It's not my top 10 rules of society. Okay.
Right.
My top 10 is that when my grandkids come and visit when they're at the church, they treat you just like they would treat me. Okay,
sure.
When my children are with you around us, they treat you and they interact with everybody around them as I taught them. Okay, as my mom taught me.
Sure.
Teaching society. Okay, I was taught that you may be black, you may be white. But if you have friends, everything else is down the bottom, on the bottom. And that's how it was.
That's how it is.
I don't worry. That's what I believe. I see no color. That's what I'm saying. I'm treating you as if you're my brother, as if we're the same equal. That's how I see things. I don't care what other people, how they respond. That's their issues. That's their problem. I sleep well at night when I interact.
Hey, Ken, you owe us no explanation. Believe me.
Right.
Zero.
Yeah, we know you.
Here's the problem.
Yeah, zero explanation.
Here's the problem, fellas, and it goes back to sometimes we got to let go of our past. Because again, I'm from the South, and you know, had white friends and everything. However, I have been treated like a secondhand citizen. My family has been treated like a secondhand citizen. You know, I've been in fights with the Klan, you know, at a young age. And so it took, you know, one of the reasons I moved away from North Carolina was because of the racism. But it goes back to where you are in society and how society looks at the world. And if you don't see God anywhere in there, you go by what you see.
Sure.
And
don't judge a book by its cover. Don't they say that?
But now you see it in political. You see it in the politics. You see it on this conversation in churches where we're talking about where there's one church. There's always been a separation.
That's my point.
And now, I mean, when I came to Waldorf, you know, everybody knows my story that, you know, me and my wife were getting along, and then my daughter is the one that says, let's go to church. And we went to the church right down the street. And you know, we had this great pastor. He just had to be white. And I didn't move away because he spoke the word. You know, Pastor Warren, he spoke the word. And that's what we were about.
Sure.
But a lot of people would look like that. I think I heard somebody says, hey, it's not a culture thing. I'm used to the music. I'm used to, you know, the atmosphere and not the actual word. I go to church for the choir. And that's where the change is because each culture does it different. I saw they were talking about it on CNN this weekend. The Whitney Houston funeral. And they talked about, well, now you're seeing inside the Baptist church and, you know, how the Baptist church does things and stuff like that. And I'm like, it doesn't matter if you are, there's only one God, there should be only one faith. But if you do have a religion, I mean, so be it. But at the end of the day, there's only one Bible.
Yeah, so I mean, but there's a threshold, right? There's a threshold or a line that's drawn. But there's a line that's drawn, right, between whether or not someone is favoring race or being racist. I shouldn't say favoring race, but being racist or prejudiced maybe towards another group, and or they have a preference. For instance, I know a lot of brothers, right, who are diehard lovers of sisters and won't go to another race. That's different. That's not being prejudiced. I don't believe so, because I bet you if I have brought some of these other Spanish and or white women around them, you know, they would perk up like they would if it was a sister, right? But they prefer to date and to be with sisters, and that's a preference. I don't think that makes them racist. I don't think that make them judging or prejudice of another group of individuals. Same thing with the church. I think if you see an all-black church, that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. I just completely disagree with that, because I don't believe all churches dating back to the first church was always universal.
No,
I mean,
no,
you,
I'm
you
not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that's how we were brought up.
Sure. I mean, well, yeah, absolutely. I think that's how we brought up. Again, I think it's a lot of it psychological. People prefer certain things. Right?
Right.
They prefer a certain type of message, a certain type of choir. They expect that. Not whether or not you're born in a black church or not. Some people haven't been born in a black church or not. In their 30s, they decide to go to church. Their parents didn't go to church. And now they prefer the type of choir, the type of preaching that black churches have. They just identify with it for whatever reason. I think, like I said, I think it's just psychological. I don't think they say, yeah, I'm looking at them as a white preacher, you know, so I can't really get with that. I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's just a style. It's a preference that people tend to like more. Yes, are there some prejudice? I'm not just gonna water down and discount the fact that there is prejudice out there on the black side as well as the white. But I'm saying I think the majority of what we're talking about here, the root, is really just psychological. You know, the parties that you choose, because to be honest with you, I think if you, and I know you have to vote, but I think if you say that you're with a particular party and that's the only party, you know, that you can think of, they do everything right, I think, and I'm going to say this without being too harsh, try not to be too harsh with individuals on the phone, but I think that's an idiot way. I'm sorry. I have to put it that way. Thank you. And I'm saying, I have to say it like that only because there, you can't sit there and say that the Democrats don't have good ideas for bettering this country, and you can't sit there and say that some Republicans don't have good ideas or independents don't have good ideas for bettering this country, no more than you can say, well, black preachers are the only ones that's really preaching the true gospel, white preachers. That's just, it's ridiculous, I think, to take one group and say they're right.
I agree with that. Now, that is 100%.
Yeah, I agree, too.
And then what you got to realize, it goes back to that, because if you notice America are getting better, getting away from one race. We're getting better. We're getting better at that. I mean, it's still a little long road to go. But it goes back to, here's how society was. You got a lot that was brought up that says you can't bring a white girl to my house, or you can't bring, you know, a black man to my house. You had those prejudices, and those people are getting out of it because we're interacting more, we're working together more, we're taking jobs together.
You said something crucial right there. Working together. You said something crucial. Why are we in $15 trillion debt? And I'm sorry not to go back there, but since we're talking about the race, and I'm just trying to illustrate why the cooperation is important across the board, and so that race shouldn't play the biggest part of it is, I guess, on the conversation or maybe in society as a whole, is that when you got Republicans and you got Democrats across the aisle, The reason why the country is in such disarray is simply because they can't cooperate. That's the bottom line. It's not because Republicans have a better idea, but the Democrats have good ideas but can't do it because the Senate's holding them the House is holding them hostage. It's not that. The fact that they don't know how to compromise, and they won't work together. That's why we're in the situation that we're in, not because of the Democrat, not because of Barack Obama, not because of Republicans, not because of a black or white thing. It's simply because they don't want to work together. It has nothing to do with race or politics, or I should say parties.
People can make all this change. They can go in there and vote for none of the above. That's always an option. You don't have to vote for any of the candidates that go. They spend money. They spend, and because my thought is, if you're spending money, all this millions, and you're talking about the debt, how come you just don't use the money that you're spending to go, that you get $10 million a day, and put it against the debt?
Well, not going there, but
just to say,
we got back to politics again.
I didn't say all that to go back there. I'm just speaking on the money, but it comes back down to money,
and there's a lot of jealousy when it comes to money.
But see,
everybody knows the Bible. It's Bible, and Matthew says you can't
You can't serve two masters.
You cannot serve two masters, the master of money and the master of religion. And that's what's happening now. And that's why we...
I think it said God and money, though. I might be wrong. I think it said God
and money. That's God. God and money, yeah, you're right.
God and money.
Yeah, God and money. Man, I'm sorry, I misquoted a little bit. But the actual thought is that this is where we are right now. It's come to a head. For somebody, we have to now make the proper decisions.
And that's what I wanted to go back to. Rodney said that they can't compromise and work together. And I asked Rodney this question.
Mm-hmm.
If one party, doesn't really matter who it is for this example, if one party wanted to spend $500 billion to get the economy going or whatever, and the other party said, well, let's compromise and spend $250 billion,
well, we don't really have a dollar. I mean, there should be no – at this point, you can't compromise with somebody who wants to spend any money, period,
because we don't have the money. I mean, if you're looking at – I mean, there's no – the only compromise is like, all right, we got to figure out what we got to do here because we can't spend no more money because we really don't have any unless we print it. And you talk about a different – you talk about monetary, theory. The thing is that you can't, you talk about compromise, you can't compromise with someone who their starting point is that I want to print money. I want to add debt to your kids and grandkids. You can't compromise with that.
Well, you can compromise, absolutely. You can't compromise with individuals who sign contracts to say we won't raise taxes, period, point blank, don't even talk to us. You can't do that either, right?
Yeah, and then you got to also say you can't, as a business owner, you can't make money if nobody spends it.
That's right.
I absolutely agree with you.
Then nobody can go and buy some deodorant,
But sorry, I didn't mean to. Wait,
getting back to race.
Let's get back to race, Tony.
Yeah, we got to get back on topic.
They get ready with me, so.
We got to get back on top. And I wanted to bring something up because this is something that the kids may deal with. And I don't know if this is something that is still going on in 2012. I was reading a story not too long ago about Taye Diggs, the actor, that he had a complex because of the color of his skin, because he was black, dark, whatever you want to say it, Michael Jordan, dark black, and or dark brown, however you want to call it. And for a long time, he felt a little inferior. And then he didn't feel comfortable until Michael Jordan came on the scene. That's what he said. And then he, felt it was okay to look like him. In 2012, Do we still have that phobia? Is that phobia still around? Does anybody know?
A phobia,
or is it pretty much outdated?
Phobia what?
Light
phobia
skin, dark skin. Light skin, dark skin.
Oh, okay.
You're on the dark skin, six more than you on the yellow thing.
Yeah,
yellow
skin,
whatever.
I don't think so.
Yeah, the light skin brothers is out now. You know, the dark skin brothers in. You know, they've been in for a while.
Hey, I never had that problem because I was international anyway. So, you know. But, I mean, was a time where you had the house, as they would call the yellow team, the house Negroes, against the dark team, which was the black Negroes, because, you know, the house Negroes were lighter. They were biracial, and they were more inferior than the dark-skinned guy. I mean, it all goes back that we have to lose the past. We know that it happened.
He's making my point. It was really bad.
But those people are going away, and we have a better life now because of other people who sacrificed. And now we should take those advantages and move forward and build collectively a nation as Americans, and then stop worrying about the other crazy things.
I think it's less about within the black community, the light skin, dark skin, less about color these days and more about economics on our issue of prejudice within our race.
Sure.
I think it's more of economic class.
That's it.
More so than it is about the skin color.
Yeah, it's more about money. There it is, yeah. Again.
Absolutely. There's poor blacks, and then there's middle class blacks, which poor class would look at it as wealthy, not knowing what wealthy really is. But looking at that, I think that's to say, you know, people moved out to the suburbs, moved out of the hood. So you got the hood, you got the suburbs. That's your race. Your light skin, dark skin. You can call it however you want to call it. But I think that's when the attention shifted to that and away from the color, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
if you really want to look at the numbers, we're all in trouble. There's white folks that's in trouble. There's black folks that's in trouble. There's Latin and Asians that's in this world. We're all in trouble. We all having financial difficulties, regardless of what color you are. This is the time we need to, you know, unite and not just point fingers.
Yeah. Well, to Tony's point, I guess back, you know, when that kind of thing was more prevalent, I think, is that, the light skin, dark skin thing was going on. Depending on what was in at the time, you know, back in the I'll Be Sure days, you know, the light skin brothers or the Elder Barge and them, those guys, you know, light skin brothers then. And that said something. It said you were attractive. You know, obviously, if you were dark skinned back then you look like a monkey. Or, you know, ape or whatever, you know, whatever the terminology and stuff they used back then. The light-skinned brothers, you know, I don't know. Like I said, nowadays it's not so much bad, but maybe when the Wesley Snipes things came out, light-skinned brothers didn't really have a shot. You know, they were just high yellow or whatever the other terms they used. But they were, whoever was in at the time, they were considered attractive. They were considered, you know, it. They were the man, et cetera, et cetera. And I think nowadays, like I said, I think it's moved away from whether or not you're light or you're dark to say that you're attractive or you're the man, and it's more geared towards your economic structure. What do you have? Because that's what's going to indicate whether or not you're attractive or you're the man. You can be light or dark nowadays. You got a little bread on the side, and, you know, you're taking care of yourself. I think, that's the way that's distinguished now on who you are in the black community, unfortunately, because that's not really a fortunate thing.
Excuse me, brothers. Can I interject here?
Please do,
brother.
Please do.
Please.
How you doing? Glad to be on phone with you guys. Actually, it's the first time I'm using this talk shoot thing, and just happened to hit on y'all's show.
Welcome.
Thank you. And talking from the perspective of a light-skinned brother, I can say that you're pretty much correct. We didn't have it good. The film industry portrayed us in a good light, I think. The media portrayed us in a good light in the 80s and so forth. And that was maybe that was because of, previous impressions of light skin, dark skin, whatever. But I think you're right. I think it is a class issue now. I think there's a huge class issue among politics and among money and, you know, people's finances and so forth. I don't know.
That's the words. And it may be that. You know, it's good words. Anybody else?
But, yeah, I don't think the light skin, dark skin. I mean, I hear it. I was talking to my a cousin of mine who's pretty old, and she was in Louisiana. She was talking about she still had those notions of light skin, dark skin, but I think with these generations now, you see the kids mixing and, you know, the music and the sports and everything, and all the colors are sort of blurring a little bit. So, you know, you don't, within the black community, you still hear it a little bit. Somebody used the term red bone the other day, had to correct them.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and this was young kid. This was my daughter's friend that used the term. So it's still a little bit around, but I don't think it's I don't think it's as much a problem as it used to be. If you don't mind, I did want to just mention that the idea of black and white and so forth as a race is it's an invented term. And it's not. I think it's more about ethnicity now. Or it may be becoming in America. It may be becoming more about ethnicity than race. Although race is still a factor, it's not as big as you know where your roots are or something like that.
And that's the word, because the Bible doesn't even mention the word race.
Right, because 2,000 years ago. Race wasn't conceived in the same way. They didn't see race as inferior or superior. They just saw it as different. And I don't even think they defined it as race per se. If you were from a particular land area, or you had a particular culture, which I think is what people mistake race for today. They mistake race for culture, you know, for ethnicity, and. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's starting to clear up, but you know, it's race is the idea of race has been around for a long time. So I think we're going to have to deal with it for a good while longer.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, race by definition is of or pertaining to the human race, period.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to a particular color.
Exactly.
I mean, I was talking to a friend who's of Latin descent, and, you know, we were talking about the fact that for Latin people, there's no the definition of race only falls under white, black, or Indian. If you designate yourself as of Latin descent, they only give you a choice of white, black, or Indian. There's no race. There's no Latin race. There's a Latin culture, but there's no Latin race on the census, on the U.S. census.
Yeah, that's it.
So,
yeah, there are only three traditional divisions of humankind anyway: Caucasoid, Mongoloid, and Negroid. That's it.
Right, and if you go back enough, you know, you get all the way to the African roots where they 30,000 years ago migrated or whatever. So it's all environment. It's all what I think we have to get over is. Is our idea that it's a part of our skin color, and it's not our environment. It is the environment. It's our ethnicity, our culture, and where we came from. You know, that makes race. That's why I feel like Barack is black. Not necessarily. I laugh at that.
Because
I was having fun listening to you guys. I really enjoyed it.
That's good. And I say this, brother. If you look at our cultures, I say this truthfully, fellas, and you know, but if you look at our cultures, mm-hmm. Barack was cultured as a white man, a white human. He grew up in private schools. Ivy League schools. I mean, in our culture,
that's not
I'm saying
that
black people don't go to Ivy League
right.
school. I'm not saying
and
that.
He can't
but I mean,
private
cool.
and yeah.
Right. He was raised by his white grandparents, his white mother, and an Indonesian stepfather. I mean, but bottom line is he was more cultured
right
to his white side than his black side. And I think that's, you know, I forgot to mention that because I was getting shouted down. But look at his upbringing. I mean, until he met Michelle at 24, he grew up as, I mean, he was associated, he was cultured around white people, period.
And to kind of back up that fact or that perception, a lot of people would have considered him like, you know, called, oh, you think you're white. You know, he thinks
that's right. That's
you know,
right.
For the way he talks. But people also have to remember that you're not white just because, or you're not quote unquote white just because you talk a certain way or you act a
yeah.
certain way or you
and
went.
Do y'all,
you know.
And do y'all remember, sorry to cut you off, but do you remember what Joe Biden said about Obama? Oh, he's articulate, he's fresh, he's clean, it's like a fairy tale or something, he said. It's like storybook.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, and not to belabor this point, please, because it's late, but to me, when people look at Barack Obama and they're like, oh, he's articulate, oh, he's this, is that,
right.
Your perception is that because he's not white, that he can't be articulate.
Yeah, sure.
You have media folks who are like, oh, my gosh, I was just, you know, this guy is just commanding the room, and he's black. It's like, what? So
yeah,
you're telling me because he's black that he can't be articulate. And that's what people are missing. You know,
but
that's racist right
that's
there.
People are missing that.
Yeah, they're missing it.
People aren't really missing that because people, the one thing that has happened is that now everybody sees it. They're seeing what we've been talking about. And this is coming from a person from the South. We've all gone to school. We're not idiots.
Right.
We have education. We get ridiculed.
But that's, you know what?
In the workplace. I mean, right now, when it's time to go up for promotions, there's some people that won't do it because even today, because of your skin color.
If you want to make more shows about this,
you might be the best candidate.
Hold on, Peter. Go ahead, Rodney.
If you want to make more shows about this, your show will never go off the air because that's something that'll. I mean, look at Frederick Douglass. I mean, you can go way back and you can look at those who quote unquote talked white. Talked articulate, you know, but you know, he's from slavery. He comes out as a slave, you know, it was supposed to have been quote unquote dumb or what have you.
Right.
But he was an educated man. I mean, you can look at Martin during the civil rights movement and you know, you can name a million other, African-Americans or however you want to identify them, but, who target, but you know, you can do this with Barack Obama. You can do this, you know, 8 years from now with someone else or, you know, this will go on and on and on forever because the media and or the parts of society will always have it. Just like they just, you know, the whole, somebody was bringing up, I think it was Pete Towns bringing up the Whitney funeral. You know, they said, oh, the black church, you know, they said the Baptist church. You know what they meant. You know what they meant. They said Baptist because they didn't want to say black. They actually probably said black, but, you know, the black church or whatever, you know, and like it's some kind of new phenomenon. And every time you get someone up there who's intelligent or speaks articulate, you know, like a Cornel West or someone like that, you know, a Tavis Smiley, and you know, then, yeah, you're gonna get it. You're gonna hear from those guys, especially if you're a newcomer. You know, you're gonna hear from them. Yeah, that's, you're going to hate
that's
it.
That's true, yeah. But I also think that the more that we come into the media through politics or whatever, entertainment, that some of those stereotypes will start to blur and fade. But it's going to take a while.
But again, we're talking Frederick Douglass up to Barack Obama.
Right.
It doesn't blur.
And so,
I think Frederick Douglass was biracial too, wasn't he? If we want to get, you know, historically correct, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just messing with y'all.
I know.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I enjoyed it. I thank you that my first experience calling on Talk Show was enjoyable, and I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
And I think you have a new fan of the show, so I'll be checking
out. Oh, good.
That's what's up. Look at the website, householdstress.com.
Pick up the book.
Yeah, I'll look for the book.
That's the name
thank
of it.
Married Men Don't Talk. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't say the name.
Thank you very much. You guys.
Thanks, brother. Peace out.
Yeah, that was good.
That's the good thing about this call. I mean, we can discuss issues even if we agree to disagree.
Absolutely.
And it's okay. You know, we can get through it without getting in there and biting the nose and be ready to fight or something.
Oh, man, y'all, wow. Oh, I'm facts on my side. I stand by that.
Hey, Rodney.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Go ahead, Tony. But people don't realize
how bad that Whitney Lynch law.
Hold on, P-Town. Hold on, P-Town. Go ahead, Tony.
I had this question, right? I was going to ask this question in reference to how we feel. You know, I think you and I talked about that, how people feel about being within their own race. And the question was, at 2 o'clock in the morning, if you are at an ATM machine outside of wherever city, and you have two black guys in back of you, and you're a black guy, you got two black guys in back of you, or you don't, you got two of something else, which is going to make you feel more comfortable?
Dangerous question.
That's a dangerous question. Now, look. I'm going to say, if you got two black people or two biracial people, which is going to make you feel more comfortable?
It wouldn't matter.
They wouldn't matter.
It wouldn't matter because I'd have been changed by all of them. I'd have been chased by the skinheads. I'd have been chased by the Klan. I'd have been chased by black folk.
Yeah, and you know what? And Patrice, honestly, I appreciate everything that you said, because some of the things that you have said tonight, I can't identify with, only because I was raised in Manhattan.
Right. Yeah.
That's the melting pot.
One story.
Well, hold on. I know very little about racism. Very little. I mean, I went to Connecticut with my cousin one summer, and you know, we were called the N-word at a restaurant, and it wasn't allowed under somebody's breath, and that was it. Exactly. You know,
yeah.
And it hurt me, but it didn't shatter me to the core. You know, I've never experienced any type of real racism or any type of being slighted because of my color or any of that. So that's why I said, well, you know, let's talk about this tonight, because I needed to hear. You said you've been chased by the Klan. I couldn't even imagine that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I can identify with the tree on that.
Well, I was
from where I'm from, from where me and my family from.
Skinheads. Not skinheads.
I ain't mean that. Tell that story.
No, I was out of town. I got a couple of stories I could tell, but I was out of town with my parents. I was a young boy. I was probably about, I was 17, junior in high school, and we went to Portland, Oregon. And I didn't know that was skinhead capital of the world. And I walked, the hotel, it was a McDonald's down the street, maybe 3-4 blocks from the hotel. And then there was a movie theater, it was right by the mall. And it was a movie theater. So me being me, I'm that guy that can get hang around anywhere with body, just like Ken, you know. I've been around them all. So I think I could blend in well. But I didn't realize that I was rolling in skinhead country. And once I realized it, luckily I was a fast dude. Because about five of them came. And I had to run for about 4 blocks. And the only thing that saved me was, you know, those parking lot elevators that if you jump through, the door won't open back up. They'll still close. That's the only thing that saved me because I made it to the elevator.
They was on you.
They was on me there. But the one that I really get frustrated, and we see it in the news all the time, and people are like, you know, the cops are doing their job. You don't know the whole story before. You know, I never forget, I had just paid my wife's car off, right? And her sister wrecked the car and went to take her son to school and got in a wreck. So we got the money. I just got this brand new job, and they gave me some upfront money, and I got the money from the car, and I bought me a Lexus. Not even 2 days after I had that Lexus, we were going to move because we just had our first child, and we were going to move. I got a job in Virginia, and my friends, we were going to have a going-away party, so we went to Raleigh. And on the way back home, we got pulled by the cops. The next thing I know, there's 5 cop cars in my house because it was four black guys in a car. Now, I didn't change no lines. I didn't go across speed limit. But they just wanted to mess with us.
You did know that AKs and cocaine was illegal, right?
And I said, man, I just bought a car. Well, do you have anything in the car? And it's like, come on, what did I do? And I have many situations like that where, you know, you get looked upon because of your color.
But
I'm with
that.
And the best thing about it, I found myself doing it to my own race. I do it now. And that's why I got to help myself out, is that until I came to the church that I'm in now, I couldn't stand some of these young boys in our own race. But now I know it's just a fad, that a lot of these kids are just dressing that way because that's just a fad. They're not all
okay.
But I was,
yeah.
There was one point I was putting them all in one category.
Let me ask something on that topic. You saying, you know, that you would, and I don't want to mess your words up, but you said you were stereotyping your own race.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what words you use. So,
yep.
So look, if you got a white guy walking down the street and he's looking at other white guys, or, you know what I'm saying, he sees other white guys kind of coming at him and stuff. How is that look different, or is there a different look than if you have a black guy going down the street and makes eye contact with other black men? I don't know if it's just me, but so I'm not even going to leave it. I'll just say, does it seem to be that black men, I use grit as a word, grit on other black men more so than white men looking at other white men?
You know what I think? You know,
have you noticed any of that?
I'm glad you asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my 2:00 in the morning ATM analogy, because it was black guys in back of you,
mm-hmm,
and the 4 white guys in back of you. How would you feel more comfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes we do stereotype ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also a state of mind, to answer your question. It's just mine,
mm-hmm,
a state,
mm-hmm,
of mind. Because sometimes we could be in a supermarket and we know we could buy whatever we want in that supermarket 100 times over. But the security guard is looking at you, you're like, does he think I'm stealing something? I mean, you know, just sometimes we, I just think it's a state of mind from something that may have happened in the past or just something. It's a state of mind where we may feel threatened by somebody because of something that's happened. Maybe we've got jumped before, and maybe that white person may be looking at some other, you know, and not know what's going on, but we know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so but let me stretch that a little further than what you were saying. That it, I mean, you could be in the store or walking down the sidewalk, and you know, you got your suit on, and you're in a downtown Manhattan environment. You know, you're not in the hood or you know doing some, you know at the shady 7-Eleven or whatever. But you know, you're walking down Main Street or what have you downtown, and you got everybody got suits on and with ties and stuff. And but do you ever see where black people in general, now you can look at a white guy, you walking down the street, you can look at a white guy, you're looking at a black guy, and sometimes it seems that a black guy, actually a lot of the times, black guy may be reading you more than a white guy. White guy look at you more like, hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
Kind of a look. And a black guy's looking at you like, what you looking at, punk? Almost.
100% correct. 100% correct. I know exactly where you're at with that.
Yeah, and that's I don't know what that is. I don't know what it stems from.
But it happens. It happens all the time. Whether they're hating on you, admiring you,
hating on
what
you.
It is.
That is cultural area. I mean, if I go, you know, they can't eat it. And for people up north, if you're a person from the south and you go to New York, you know that they're gonna grit at you. They're not gonna have the same hospitality.
Yeah,
but they don't know you're from South Carolina, right?
Huh?
I mean, they don't necessarily know you from South Carolina. You're just a black man.
Yeah, but my whole point is that
okay?
That's why they're gritting at you. Like, why are you looking at me? Why are you acting like that?
Yeah, you hating. I like the way Tony has said hating.
Yeah, hate.
You hating on me for? It's not necessarily that I have maybe a nicer suit or a nicer car or whatever the case. Because we just walk it. We just look, and it's just a look that says, I don't like you, almost automatic. Like, what you looking at? I don't like you. Who you think you are, kind of thing. I don't know if it's more like a almost territorial. I don't know. You know, like, this is wherever I am, I'm the boss. So what are you looking at, kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but I know that there's a difference.
Yes.
You don't get that. You'll get that if you make an eye contact. I'm not saying with all – obviously, there could be white people who do the same thing, but when you look at, I'm saying in general, you have a eye contact with, you know, they're more of a, hey, how you doing, or
yeah,
maybe even look right through you. But
and it's crazy.
A brother stare you up and down, and it's almost like, let's see who's going to blink first when you look at a black guy.
Exactly. And I turn away. Right now, you know what, I see it. And I immediately turn away. I don't want to make eye contact with you. If you hating, you ain't. I'm
right.
Not gonna help.
Right,
you.
Right. Or a biracial guy. Let me help ride me out.
You would be
right.
Saying something.
I'm trying to get you.
You're getting it.
I will tell you something. I gotta give credit to one guy, and only for one day. One guy, for one day. Not the day before, well, maybe the day before, but not the day after or the week after. And that's Louis Farrakhan. And let me tell you why. You know, Rodney, what you've been talking about, I've experienced it my whole life. And I'm pretty sure you have too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where it's somebody's always gritting. I mean, from childhood, there's always somebody hating mm-hmm. on you, gritting or whatever. And that 1 million man march day, mm-hmm. there was no gritting. There was no hating.
Mm.
And I remember it. I remember it because I went down
mm-hmm.
in D.C. And I remember this. There was a wall. And everybody was trying to get closer to the stage. And there was this wall. And the wall had a little hole in it. And there was one brother on one side and one brother on the other side. And as you got to that wall, these two brothers would grab both of your arms and pull you through the hole. And it was just a symbolization of where we need to be, opposed
mm-hmm.
to hating on each other and find out how'd you get that car and why you wearing that suit and why you got those shoes on or whatever it is, or why is your wife so fine or whatever it is. we need to still figure a way to pull us together through that hole. You know, it was only one day, because I haven't seen it come back since. But that was a good day for us. And I think that we need to get back to that, because right now, what you're talking about is real. It's going to happen to one of somebody on this phone tomorrow. Somebody's going to grit on you for no reason.
For no reason.
And all you're going to do is laugh. Be like, man, we just talked about this cat last night.
You know, it's not even us. Because right now, I mean, when I was in D.C., it was terrible. If you was, you know, in the city and you was on the train, how we allow our kids to act. We allow it to go on as men.
So, with all of that being said, is there more prejudice with internally than externally?
Yes.
Within our race?
We got reverse racism right now, and we don't even know it.
We're
racism in our community right now. We're racist. We do it to ourselves. And it goes back to the first thing that Tony said at the beginning of this call, is that why is every other race doing well and the black community is not?
So it's not
anybody that's doing on the outside, because they're actually trying to help us. The Indians are trying to help. They want to help. The Native Americans want to be a part. But we do it to ourselves.
So we're worse of an enemy to ourselves than, quote unquote, the man or the clan or the Aryan Nation or any of these other things. We're more. Go ahead.
It don't bother us no more.
What are you laughing for, Rodney?
They don't bother us anymore.
They don't have to. They don't have to. He's right. They don't have to. They ain't got to burn down no cross in your front yard no more. Them days
over. You got some that's still doing it, but it's way less. You know, because it's a bigger thing now.
Yeah.
Right.
It's broader. They lost the battle of education because we're now educated. They lost the battle of homes because now we're living right beside them. They lost the battle of jobs because we're working with them.
Yeah.
They lost the battle of prosperity because now we know that we can make it. We can make a senator. We can make a governor. We can make a president. We have those things. The problem is right there. In the hood, where we put these guns in our community, we put these drugs in our community, and we all know it's bad. But we allow it to go on. We think it's funny. If you go on the internet, we see ourselves disrespecting our women in the club, taking clothes off.
So you say we're forfeiting our argument for external racism until we deal with the internal. We can't really talk about any other groups or other nationalities or what have you coming down on us, talking about us, holding us back until we deal with our own internal racism within our race.
Wow.
That's
profound,
man.
That's profound, but it is.
Yeah, look at what happened to Bill Cosby. Now, Bill Cosby told it how it was and what happened to him. Did the leaders say, oh, yeah, thanks, Bill, for telling how it is? No. It was like, oh, he need to go back. I mean, they didn't endorse that. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth hurts.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't speak nothing that wasn't truthful. You know, he may have embellished a little bit here and there, but, you know, with the message of what he was saying was truth.
Sure.
And it didn't get embraced, you know, by the quote-unquote leaders.
Yeah. We can no longer have that argument. There's no such thing. The man is a myth right now.
Right. That's what I'm hearing.
It's a myth. We can no longer take that, and we can't, you know, somebody said earlier that we need, I think Rodney said earlier that we would need some kind of advantage. No, we don't need an advantage. We've got every opportunity just like anybody else.
Even playing field.
even playing field, just like anybody else. In most arenas, the highest job, we already got it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Obama has raised that bar to the point where you can't go back and say, yeah, well, I didn't get this job because I was black. No, you didn't get it because you weren't qualified. Period.
Because I'm going to tell you one thing. Before my grandfather passed away, he says, listen, we became an even playing field when they gave us the right to vote.
Yes, even. It's been even for a long time now.
I think it, but you know what? I would say it's even further back than that because, again, you know, and I don't know why he particularly keeps coming up to me tonight on this call, but you look at a Frederick Douglass.
Yeah.
To rise to the height. He was more or less a President Barack Obama in his day.
Sure.
To rise to the height that he did, having absolutely no rights, learning outside of the school in some cases, outside the doors of a school because he wasn't allowed in them. You know, to be able to have that determination, to have that tenacity and that boldness to go out and do. And that's what all of us have today. And not only do we have the ability to do the same thing he did, we now have all the rights and everything else to go along with it. Absolutely no excuse. Outside of just being lazy.
That's it. No excuse.
Simply being lazy.
No excuse. We got no time.
People fail.
You got the internet, you can self-teach. Go ahead.
Now, let me tell y'all a story. Can I tell y'all a story real quick?
Yeah, sure.
When I first got to D.C., I had my oldest daughter was an infant. She wasn't even one. I had to get a job. Me and her mom lived in an apartment. No, I think we may have had an apartment, or maybe we lived in her mother's. I think we got an apartment in Hyattsville, Eager Road, somewhere over there, a little, maybe one-bedroom apartment. But anyway, make a long story short, I had to get a job. She was already working, so I had to get a job. Couldn't find a job, just got to D.C., couldn't find a job. I was waiting for a government job to come through. But in the meantime, I had to do something. So I went to a place called Manpower. I don't know if y'all heard of that. Temporary job agency.
Temp agency, sure.
Yeah, but it was for labor.
Mm-hmm.
They told me to go show up on H Street Northwest at 6 o'clock in the morning and stand on the corner. Black guy, stand on the corner and wait for somebody to pick you up in a pickup truck. This is my story, true story now. Stand and wait for somebody to pick you up in a pickup truck as a day laborer. Right? And I was like, okay, that's where I'm going because that's how I'm going to make. Now, it was no guarantee. There was no, this is your, you know, you got to go see Mr. Jones and here's the job. No, you stand there and if they pick you up. So anyway, make a long story short, I went. Couple days I got picked up. And I went to this job site and they had me work. I was working for a crane company, but all I did all day was clean up dirt all day. Towards the end, the guy who was there said, hey, you know, you clean up really well, because I ain't know nothing but to just do what I was told to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
The guy said, well, you know, if you're not, you know, hired, we'll hire you at the crane company. That's how I got the job at the crane company. You know what I mean? But I wasn't too proud to go out there. And now you see Latinos doing it at Home Depot every day. That's not even their family. Mm. But I was like, this is what I had to do because my kids need to eat. My daughter needed to eat.
Right.
These people nowadays are saying, well, let me go get on welfare. No. If you are able, go out there and do what you got. That's why I can't respect them. If you sit home and do nothing, or you got your hand out, like Rodney said earlier, I can't respect that. You got to go out and find a way to take care of the family that you brought here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, and somebody used to say it on this call all the time. Might be you, but in the 60s, we had the movement. Men were in there. They were in the home. So the government despised a way to get the men out the home by putting drugs in the community. when there's no jobs, let's put the drugs in there and use this as an experiment. That move removed the men from the community because they got on drugs. And then so they started this thing called, well, if you don't pass the piss test, then you can't get a job. And it went right out the window, out of, right out to the James Evans era.
Yeah.
Where the man, I don't care what he had to do, he was going to go out there and get a job. Even if there was no jobs out there, and we didn't need for nothing.
Right.
I mean, sure. My grandparents didn't need for anything. But they bust their tail for what they could do.
Sure. Well, yeah, ultimately, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is that we failed us. And I say we, and anytime someone, you know, some folks, I don't think you guys would, but when you hear we, like, wait a minute, no, I didn't do that because I'm teaching my kids the right way. Doesn't matter. It's a community, it's a race, it's a cultural thing within our community, quote unquote, and we fail. Because you say they place drugs, they place guns in there, but we pick them up, we use them, we put the bullet, we put the clip in there, we put it in the pipe, we shoot it in the arm. If we as a community together, we said, you know, such as the Montgomery bus boycott, when you come together and say, no, we're not going to have this, then they've got to change something.
Sure.
But as long as we accept or do whatever, that's what I say, racism, external racism as we knew it is a myth. It doesn't really exist anymore. Because like you said, the playing field is leveled. I think we all can agree with that.
That's right.
And because it's been leveled, here we are with the ability to do the same 24 hours as anyone else, and we can become who we want to become or who the word tells us that we can become if we get up and do something. And as a unit, like you said, the Million Man March, when you got up together, the Million Man March, there was a difference. There was a difference for, I don't know how long it was, maybe a week, 2 weeks, maybe.
It was.
You know, it was a difference. And then, you know, it died off or what have you, and the leaders that we tend to as a community gravitate to, you know, went back to their old ways of dealing with things, being very political and very, you know, whatever, not making any progress in what they're doing. But I think when we as a community say enough is enough, again, we got history that proves when we do that, our actions speak louder than our words. When we do that, we can change that. But to say, you know, well, they did this and they gave us this and they, you know, did this, that's all a bunch of excuses. And then to top all of that off, when we talk about the black race, let's bring that down to even a smaller number of individuals and just say the Christians within the black community. You know you don't have an excuse. Even if the average black person has an excuse to say the white man isn't white man at or whatever, Latinos are taking over all the jobs, the labor jobs or whatever. Whatever excuses they want to use, we as Christians, within the African-American community, should absolutely understand that we have the power. We can do all things through Christ, who strengthens us. Like Tony said, you get up, you go out, you be day laborer, whoever you got to be, to make sure you got food on the table for your family. That has nothing to do with the white man. That has nothing to do with Carter or George W. or George H. Right. That had nothing to do with them. Whether or not you go ahead.
Hey, Rodney. Think about this, though. Think about this thing. You said the Latinos are taking the labor job. I mean, think about this. What do the Latinos say about our country? What do Mexicans say about our country? What do illegals say about our country?
It's the land of opportunity.
The land of opportunity. They're coming here. They'll die to get here. They know they're going to lose family members, but one or two are going to make it and send money back. They're going to make it happen.
And that's the whole talking about earlier, where Indians and these Latinos and Hispanics and Asians, it's hard in their country. It's very hard to job and make the money that we have. We don't know how great we have it, that we're fussing, and everybody's looking at us like, look at these idiots. But they come over, they get the grants. We've made it so they can come over, and it's the land of opportunity. And that's where we forgot. I think we lost that around the way. This is the land of opportunity. And people are using that. They're coming over here and they're going to our school. They're going and getting, they get grants for opening up businesses here. And then that's when you know you have community. You've seen it. You got a Chinatown. You got an Italian town. You got all these towns.
Yeah. You know, I, as a matter of fact, just flew back tonight, just got off the plane right before the call. I was in, Tony, you may know this, but was in South Florida for the last few days, and I was at a church on Sunday. And at the church, I got some friends down there, and they had a house maybe 4 years ago. A guy had shot me an email, and he said, hey, you know, this is the house me and my wife's looking at right now. You know, we're praying. You know, we pray with us. I said, okay, absolutely, we'll pray with you. Not hating on them as some others would do, because the house is definitely bigger than mine. It was a really nice, really nice big house. I said, okay, well, I'm going to pray for it, though. That's what you guys are looking for, and you praying to God. I'm going to pray. You know, so long story short, they get the house. And we would go down, me and my wife would go down, and we would, you know, we spent some weekend, long weekends there, what have you. And then we said, you know, and I think you guys already know, you know, we have a place down there. And we started looking for a place. And we flew down for their housewarming. Flew down there, they got it. We were excited because, you know, we were praying along with it. So we got down there, we were excited about that, celebrating it. Like I said, maybe a year later, you know, we decided, okay, well, what are we going to get? So we did. And so this past weekend, they just told me, you know, they got this brand new car, nice luxury vehicle and everything. And so I mentioned it to the church when I addressed the church. And I said, you know, they got a new car. And I said, I know I'm putting their business out there or whatever, but I'm going to explain why. I said, because we hate on people and we're supposed to be celebrating each other, not being envious or hating. Because this person got that, and that whole gritting thing we were talking about, not hating because you got something. So if I'm in that circle and I'm around people who get things, then I'm learning. I might be able to learn also how to obtain some things. If I watch you buy a house and you go through the process, that's going to help me. It's going to encourage me for one, but it's going to also prepare me for when I go to get my house, some things that I'm going to be looking for. So, long story short, again, is that I made a joke out of it because I said, okay, I celebrated their house. I came down, celebrated, didn't hate on them, didn't be envious, didn't say, I ain't praying for that. That house bigger than my house. Because of that, you know, then I was also blessed. And I said, I'm praying for this car because I want me a new car too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to celebrate this. Because if I'm in your circle, we're in, you know, each other's circle, then I think it comes around to you. Your season comes, but when it's not your season, you ought to sit there and you ought to celebrate anyone else's accomplishment. Not hate on them, not belittle them. And I think of them as we're a family together.
Amen.
And that's the way the community as a whole has to look at things. So, you know, you get a big screen TV, yeah, okay, whatever, you know. No, that's great. I'm glad to hear it because now I know that I can get one. Not that I didn't know before, but now that just kind of reaffirms it's possible to write a book, right? Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
It's possible
to get a book published. Coming from where I come from, out there in the sticks in the country of Pennsylvania, in the hills with the Klan, writing a book. I didn't even want to read books up until I was probably 19, 20 years old, to be honest.
I'm right there.
Amen, brother. Amen to that.
I mean, just think of the encouragement that one person's vision helped
sure.
you with your vision.
That's exactly
right. You know, this man came to me in church and says, hey, man, I want you to help me out with this call. Just get on it. Just listen to it. I got this vision, and here it go. And then once I heard the call, we stayed on after and talked about the vision. He says, I think we can get this and make sure that no man will look at divorce as an option anymore. And
but
we've done our job. And the next thing I know, I'm passing out a card to another church member of ours. And we enhanced this thing. Now you have a book coming out. So now this man is eating. Guess what? He's going to make us eat.
Yeah.
We all
and his
and you
thing
never
now got us to do things. Romney has gotten the biggest promotion he's ever seen at his job, and he got a new baby coming along, and he has no worries. I just quit a job with the company and started my own company based off one man's vision that he wasn't scared to move forward with.
Right. Well, I think Rodney said it earlier when he said that as Christians, we don't have a choice.
We don't have a choice.
As Christians, we don't have, there's no the man. There is one. There's one that says, okay, this is what I need you to do. And I didn't have a choice. I couldn't say, okay, all right, maybe. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, okay, you know, when he said this is what has to be done, whether I agreed or I didn't, you know what I mean? Whatever it was, I had to show up. I had to put that faith and say, okay, well, let me give it a shot. Just like with Rodney writing books. At some point, he had to say, I'm gonna listen to you, and I'm gonna give, I'm gonna put my best foot forward and do what you're asking me to do. And that's all. And that's just the first. And once you take that first step, then you can't turn around,
right?
Because it's not you that you have to answer to anymore.
Because we've
let ourselves down a trillion times. I've let myself down a trillion times. Didn't care. I was like, maybe I'll do it tomorrow.
Right.
But when that power comes, you can't just say, because he gonna come at you again tomorrow and wake you up and be like, okay, isn't there something you're supposed to be doing?
Right.
Yeah.
Even if you can't see the entire world, because you know he said that the disciples that he sent out, he said these are those that turn the world upside down, the whole world, not just their community, but the whole world. But even if we can't see that big, we should at least look within our immediate race, quote unquote, culture, community, and say, I have to make a difference in this. I had people come to my job, some African American men who've been on my job, who are no longer there, for obvious reasons. But I would have to pull them into a conference room as a manager. I pulled them into a conference room, not supposed to have these type of conversations with individuals. Nonetheless, I'm saying, look, man, you're messing it up for everybody. And I'm saying everybody, I'm meaning black folks, because you're coming in late, you're taking long lunch breaks, you're sitting at your desk almost falling asleep, you know, things like that, and you're asked to do things, and you don't get them done in a timely manner. And I said, you're making it bad. You don't understand how bad you're making it on everybody. Because the next person who wants to come in and get hired, a senior management is going to automatically say no. And they do that. I'm the only black man in my office.
Wow.
The only one. And we have, and under my corporate officer, he has 7 units across the East Coast that he's responsible for. Not one of those 7 units has a black manager in it, except for me.
Yeah.
Mm.
The rest of any other black person works in a warehouse or back in the back room. None work in the front office. And I tell them, and some who's been there, as soon as the recession came, they was almost, I think the senior manager is probably grateful, because they just used that as an excuse to wipe them all out. They exterminated everybody. And but I used to tell these guys, look, you make it bad for everybody. So my point is, as a Christian, you know, that's the goal isn't, okay, what can I obtain? But once, you start making some progress, right? Your wheels start turning. You start rolling down the hill. You know, Papa becomes a rolling stone, so to speak. He gets some momentum. You make some progress. That's great. But then at another point in your life, you mature to a level to say, you know what? My mindset has to stretch beyond me. Obviously, God's bigger than just me. At some point, you mature to that point and say, I have to make an impact for my family. You start there, right? Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the world. You got to start at home first. You say, I got to make an impact on my children and my wife. I got to encourage her and her dreams and the things she wants to obtain and my children, and make sure I'm not crushing their dreams. As I heard someone say one time on the call that their parents had crushed them or had crushed them, and later on in life you picked back up your dream. I don't know who that was, but at any regard, you know, and then you start looking at your community, these other kids in the neighborhood. Instead of calling the police on them for, playing football and hitting your car with the football, why don't you, spend some time, talk to these kids in the neighborhood, and, talk to them about you know what I mean? And you start impacting, doing different things. Go to an orphanage, go to a prison, go to a wherever, you know, just you start making a greater impact, and everybody has that potential. Everybody has that opportunity. Matter of fact, if everyone's Christian, it's all of our business. That's what we're supposed to be doing. That's the whole purpose of having the power to obtain wealth and the power to be an overcomer, the power to be more than a conqueror, the power to be first and not last, the light upon the hill. What's another one? I'm above and not beneath. You know, all these scriptures, I was going to say cliches, but all the scriptures that we quote are for a reason. And so that God can be glorified, so we can be seen. That's what it says in Galatians, the last verse in Galatians 1, says that they may glorify God in me. That's the whole point, so they can see God in you, and not just your Lex or your BMW or your Mercedes or whatever. But, you know, our job is to make an impact in the world, I guess. That was a long-winded sermon.
No, but no, respect. I mean, sometimes they got to be long.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I have to agree with you 100% because, you know, I don't want to be here. But just like Tom said, I was told to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into all the things that the what ifs. And I'm not even worried about the what ifs because I know he's protecting my family because he's already ordered me to go away. So he's not going to allow anything to happen while I'm gone.
Right.
So
and if you have faith for it. Yeah.
And because he knows this is only part time. Now I just have to make sure I show up and go to work. That's it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's already put me in the position, so I already know what to do. I just got to go do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's where your opportunities come from, right? When he says, when someone says, well, how did you do that? You were, you know, you were in the pit. You know, you were a day laborer, right? You were being picked up at the Home Depot. How did you get to the point where you got a published book, you got a talk show that's worldwide, really worldwide, on the radio, you know, whatever else is going on in your business, in your financial life, you got all this. So how do you go from that to raising these type of well-trained, well-behaved children, responsible children? How do you have a maintain a good relationship with your spouse, growing, fresh? How do you go from that? And that opens up the opportunity to tell someone then about God. But he gives you the window. He gives you the opportunity. Do your progression in life. He says, here it is. Faith without works is dead.
Wow. That's strong right there.
You can't have godly talk without godly action.
Yeah. And that's really profound that you say that, man, because I think I may have said it before. I've always, when I became a Christian, well, I pretty much always have been, but when I got rededicated, my biggest issue was discipleship. I was like, how am I going to get people to listen to me go to church? I didn't know. I was like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to, you know, I wasn't educated enough in the Bible where I could back up what I was saying. My testimony just wasn't strong enough at that point. That's probably what it was. You know, and now I'm a little bit more confident, and I can say this is why, when you look at certain things, I can say this is why these things have happened, is because of what I've done, because of my obedience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you too can have whatever it is that you want,
exactly.
But you got to first start where I had to start.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And you know, people say, "Well, yeah, I mean, we hear the infomercial. You too can be rich. All you got to do is buy these properties and sell them at this price, and yada 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 yada." No, that's not it. And what is rich? And me and Rodney was talking about that other day. What is success? What is rich?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Success for us may not be to be sitting on Oprah's couch. It may be to keep one man from strangling his wife.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We don't know. You see what I'm saying? But we're in a position where we can do just that. And we may never get to that point. You know what I mean? But we're okay with it.
Yeah.
We may never get to the point of stardom, Steve Harvey status. We may never, and we may, whatever God says, this is where I need you to go, that's where we got to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
Absolutely right.
And we're not taking the fast track. We're not trying to get the get rich quick or get it out there fast. Sometimes it took you know, past 25 years to get 500 people in this track.
Yeah.
What started out was just two fans.
Mm-hmm. And to bring it back full circle, you know, the objective, if we're going to remove the myth from our community, then we have to start it as an individual and then spread that, like I said, almost from Jerusalem, Judea, from our house to our community, city, et cetera, et cetera. We have to show people that you can't sit there and ask for 40 acres. I say this often, as, you know, you ask, they owe us 40 acres and a mule. Most of us wouldn't know what to do with 40 acres and a mule. I wouldn't. 40 acres is a lot of land.
Yes.
And I have no idea what to do with a mule. But, you know, I ain't riding them. Absolutely. I ain't going to ride them. I ain't trying to get kicked by them either.
For sure.
I'm trading a mule in for John Deere. I'm sorry.
But you know, this is what we have to show them, especially the younger generation, is that you can't sit around and expect somebody, any entitlements, right? You're expecting somebody to have to just give you something. You're entitled to this, or you deserve that. You know how our kids are, some of us who have older kids, they're entitled. They think they deserve a car. They just deserve a new pair of tennis shoes. They just deserve this, that, and the other. And it's like, well, wait a minute. No, here's something, especially as they get older. But you teach them, this is how you get it. Not even when they get older, I should say that, because you got piggy banks and banks. You can teach them at a young age, but this is how you get it. This is how it's done. You save up. I was down, my daughter's in, as you guys know, I think most of you know that the oldest one is in college in Florida.
Yeah.
And so I took her, we went car shopping, because she wanted to get a car. Actually, we've been looking online for the last few weeks. So she found one that she likes. I went down. She had saved up $7,000. So she has my old car. So I told her, after this car goes, I said, you better be saving, because it's not going to last forever. I've been telling her that time and time again. She's had it for probably 3 years now, and I had it for about 10 years. And I kept telling her, I said, okay, I hope you're not spending, because I'm telling you, we can't get you another car because we have another daughter in school in New York. And then, you know, my son's still trying to make his decisions and stuff. And we were trying to eventually be able to, once we pay off all of their college stuff, to get out of here ourselves and move to Florida. So she saved up. She did. She surprised me. She saved up $7,000. So the car she wanted was $9,000 plus taxes. It was like $9,500 or whatever. So we gave her the other $2,500 as a loan. So she's paying us back with a bank. So I'm glad to be living with the word says the lender, not the borrower, right? But the point was that, you know, I was teaching her, you can't make excuse. You know, the car goes down. If the car goes down and, you know, transmission or anything can happen in it, and you're caught kind of with your pants down, you don't have no money to get nothing, and, you know, you come crying and you making excuses. Oh, the car broke down, and I can't get to work or whatever. I said, I don't want to hear the excuses, because you were told years ago, keep putting money away, because the car ain't going to last forever. So when that happens, I told her, I'm not buying a car. This is your last one I'm buying. You have to buy the next one. And she listened. So I'm saying, as a community, we have to do that. There's no entitlement. There's no, I deserve this and I got it. No, there's a way of getting what you want, and it's not wrapped up, quote unquote, in a miracle. Mm-hmm. Nobody messes with no one's religion by saying that, mm-hmm. or religious thoughts by saying that. because God gives us, He gives us some common sense things to do, right? And and when you look at those common principles, I should say, because you got Muslims working the same principle as Buddhists, as Christians, and seemingly the Christians are the only ones that's not prospering. They're common principles. You get up, you go to work. Paul says, "You man don't work, man don't eat." That's a simple principle. So you get up, you go get a job, you work it, you save your money, you pay your bills. you know, you buy a car, some real estate or whatever, you can open a business or whatever. And I'm not excluding God, obviously, from any of that, but I'm saying you can look around at different people who are just serving different gods and working the same principle and, you know, making things happen. Because some things God has just placed in us to be able to do, especially the man. Once we were kicked out of the garden, that's what he gave us, right? He says, your job is to till the land. You got to work for a living.
Yeah, it's a work ethic.
It's a work ethic, sure. You do this, you're going to get this. That's a simple law, almost some of the law of physics, right? I mean, you do this, you're going to get this. Now, how far you go depends on who you're serving. And I say how far, I don't mean necessarily billions or trillions of dollars. I'm saying you also have some joy and peace, because we can look at some of these stars who, you know, have a lot of money, but they ain't got no peace, they ain't got no joy, they ain't got no love. But that's what we have to get to our community. We have to do that individually with ourselves, and then we have to reach it to our families and to our communities. We have, if it's going to stop, it has to stop with us as an individual and then as a group. Simple as that. Drugs and guns is not acceptable.
I tell you what, though, man, on your behalf, man, it's and knowing this, because you and I are very similar in those areas, because
mm-hmm.
I went car shopping with my daughter. But it's being in a position where you can say, I got the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's huge, man. When you can sit there and they can come to you and say, okay, this is, I got this far, and you can say, I got the rest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you can, I mean, seriously, because, you know, I see a lot of people that come in, kids that come in, try, you know, when I'm at the car dealership and they try
uh-huh.
to buy a car,
yeah.
and their parents, well, I can't help you. Don't ask
mm-hmm.
me. I can't help you. I can't
mm-hmm.
get time for you. I ain't got no money. But to be in a position, I mean, it just says a lot about your life, that you've
mm-hmm.
done the right things for your daughter to say, okay, come on, let's go. Get what you want. Find what you want. And I understand you saved your money. I'm taking it the rest of it. Even if it's a loan,
yeah.
it doesn't matter. You were still
yeah.
in a position where you didn't have to look to your left, look to your right. You said, I got it.
Yeah. Well, and you know what really made me feel proud, more so than that, was that she said, and that's kind of where that came from, that she was saying, she found the car, you know, it's $9,000. She knew she only had $7,000 and without taxes or whatever. But she said, no. She almost cried. And I had to talk to her because she said, I wanted to do this on my own. Mm-hmm. And she almost felt like she let herself down because she didn't have the other, you know, $2,500 or whatever. And she couldn't get the loan on her own, and she didn't want to co-sign or whatever. And I said, so, and that's why I kind of went and said, okay, well, we're gonna put the rest of it in. And she said, but I'm going to pay you back because I want to do this on my own. And that made me feel more proud than anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I said, fine, you take this, you pay me back. It's better than a bank anyway because they're going to charge you interest. But you know, that's the kind of thing that we should hand down, not only to our family, like I said, but it really should be to our community and to the world. It's our obligation. Like, Rodney, I know, you know, really good with finances from what I've heard on the phone. You know, you're really good at keeping your wife in control. No, I'm kidding.
We can relate, Rodney.
Absolutely. But those are type of things that think of how many other, and I'm not putting you on the spot, but I know how you are with finances, but think of how many young men and young women in our community who don't have that ethic.
Right.
That we
right.
need to, all of us need to, you know, kind of pass on, and, you know, just business things from Tony or P-Town or, you know, whatever things that we have on this call that are good on the call. We're learning from each other. But, you know, and I'm glad Tony actually put the call together for the simple fact that it needed to be broad. It needed to reach more people. And this is a way of doing it. However, it's not the only way. So all of us individually have to continue to reach out. And that's why I'm glad also Tony put the book out there. And, you know, next time it'll be, you know, a cable show or on the TV network or something like that. And keep kind of progressing and putting the message out there even to a broader audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good words.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we got to do, man. We all got to do it. We got to
do their part.
Everybody got to do their part. Everybody got, you know. But anyway, it's been all
right.
It's 12:16.
Isn't that something?
Rodney, you've been up since 4?
Yep.
And Patrice
wow.
hasn't been asleep at all?
I ain't been to sleep at all, man. I got called
wow.
to life. Wow,
I don't feel bad.
Wow, that's good stuff right there.
All right.
Well, we had our talk show about race. We may never have to ever visit it ever again.
Please.
And be careful with the politics too.
Yeah, because that could go, you know.
Yeah.
We might have to have a biracial show, though.
That's good.
Hey,
Paul. Yeah.
All right. Change the topic. I want to keep it the way we're going now. I want to talk about guns next week.
Guns?
Guns. Protecting the family. Guns being the home.
Get 2 hours out of talking about guns?
We did that already. I must protect my house.
Yeah, we did that a long time ago.
That was a good show, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I want to, I mean, guns is in the news right now. And it's going to, I'll get it.
Okay.
I'll get
it
out.
Yeah, all right, well, it's all good. Let us know. Keep us posted. You guys have a safe trip back.
Yeah. All right, brothers. Later on. Catch y'all tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.